Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Alfred and I did this show on the 9th of July, and it was on the 13th of July that I was sitting down to add a few things and to actually build the video. And as I was getting ready to start working on the video, I went to YouTube, and to my amazement, I saw that about 48 minutes earlier, there had been an attempt on Donald Trump's life. So I got caught up in watching that and watching the follow-up for quite a while. So I thought that I would just add a little bit about the assassination attempt on Donald Trump into the front of this video, because this is the first video that I'm putting out since the assassination attempt. I just want to make a few comments about this attempt on Trump's life. If you look in the photo there, you'll see that a freaking bullet that was intended for his head just missed him. It just missed him. That man has had the luckiest survival of an assassination attempt that you can imagine. It is incredible that it hit his ear. If you look in the film footage, you'll see that he actually felt the bullet, and he was quick. He actually swiped there by his ear with his hand, and he was really fast. He actually told everyone to get down. Trump's actual reactions in this particular situation are actually amazing. That man has clearly gone through the drills, and he was really quick, really fast on this matter. All in all, I must tell you that Trump's behavior in this, even where he later resisted the Secret Service and he said he wants his shoes, and then he started putting up his straight arm salute, and he even told people they must fight. All in all, I must tell you, this is probably Trump's finest moment. I cannot see any time in the rest of his life where he's going to be better than he was in that short period of time. Donald Trump really came through in an amazing way, and what a piece of luck, I must tell you. They say that the Secret Service killed the shooter, and it will be interesting to see who the shooter is. But anyway, we'll find out the actual details by the time you see this video. Tons more will be known. But I just want to talk a little bit about Americans and white Americans. I have come across so many instances where white Americans seem to think that America is somehow different to other countries. All white people everywhere, suffer from a kind of arrogance. All of us without exception, all of us without any exception are like this. We have a certain kind of an arrogance, and it might be because we are problem solvers, and we see someone else making a mistake, or we see other whites making a mistake, and then we say, but we can do better. And so it may just be a racial thing. It's the way we are, and we always look at others and we say, we can do better than that. And then when you are successful, then you become even more arrogant, and you start thinking that you can solve lots and lots of problems. This is actually something that you can see quite a number of times in history. And at the moment, a lot of Americans think that the American system and the American way is the best way, and that this system can handle everything. The fact is that America is built on the Roman Republic, and it's a wonderful design, and that design is very strong. And I actually believe that in the end, that design will win. However, there's one proviso. What nobody ever mentions is that America is basically a white country created by white people, created by Europeans. America is actually the biggest white nation on the planet. Yes, you've got blacks there and you've got Jews and you've got other rubbish there as well. But the majority of your population are whites from Europe. And the Indians, the Red Indians, and the Jews and Mexicans were not involved in the drawing up of your Constitution or in the things that came to make America great. It horrifies me that white Americans never see themselves as white, and white Americans never see America as the greatest white nation on earth, which is what it is. In terms of population, there is no single country on the planet that has got as many whites in it under one government as the United States. And you people are constantly ducking and diving on the racial issue. I was just watching a video from a historian called Hansen. And Hansen was in the government at the time of Obama. And he talks about how Obama began talking about race. And that for the first time ever during his time in government, here is an American president, but a non-white American president, eh? And he is talking in terms of race. So Hansen carries on like a liberal, and Hansen says, oh, well, you see, we Americans, we always thought we could overcome this issue of race, and that this is a tradition that we've been at for a long time, etc., etc. I've got the video and we can look at it later. And the real thing is that I've mentioned before that there are Americans who have said that America is special and that white Americans can overcome all problems because they can unite people around a concept. That's another excuse that another American came up with. I actually mentioned these things in a show that relates to one of the shows that I did with Frederick Blackburn. And all I want to do is warn you Americans that as much as you people try, you white Americans, as much as you people have been conditioned and you have tried your utmost to pretend that race does not exist, that if you do things differently to other whites, that you are going to succeed where others have failed. You can try this, but I want to tell you, you're going to lose. Because in the end, all racial issues are real. And the experiences of Europeans in Africa and across the world, remember, Europeans have had empires in almost every corner of the earth. And they've ruled all kinds of races, whether it is the Dutch ruling in the Philippines, whether it is the Belgians in the center of Africa, or the Germans in Namibia, or the British in Kenya, etc. Whites have ruled lots of other races. And if you imagine that people like the Boers, who've lived among blacks for hundreds of years, far longer than you've had blacks in your country. If you imagine that your system of integration, where you bring everybody into your society as an equal, you are going in the opposite direction of what other whites did. All the other whites went and they engaged in some kind of segregation and racism. And you now think that doing the complete opposite of that is somehow going to work. You Americans had segregation back in the 1950s, and that was already a big issue there. And now you people are being flooded with all kinds of weirdos and creeps and human garbage, over and above the fact that you've got the biggest Jewish population on earth. I just want to warn you that race is real. And it doesn't matter how you try by yourself to coexist with other people. Those people are different. And this is true for the blacks, and this is true for the Jews. And in this video, in this show, Alfred and I are going to be discussing the Jews. and the role of the Jews in getting him into jail. And I just want to warn you that things like the Jewish issue, which the Germans have been beaten up on endlessly since World War II, issues like the Jews, you will eventually discover that the Germans are very reasonable whites. And in actual fact, most of our race is reasonable most of the time. The Germans were the ones who were giving Jews a place to stay for something like 600 years, at a time when other whites, like the Spanish and others, were tossing Jews out. The Germans were busy taking the Jews in, and the Germans coexisted with the Jews for longer than America has existed. And those German Jews became wealthy, and Germany was capitalist, and Germany was functioning in very much the same way that America is functioning now. There were lots of rich Jews, lots of capitalism, lots of that was going on. But in the end, the whites and the Jews came to blows, with the Jews trying to turn Germany into a communist state. And you Americans, you are now entering your period where similar kinds of things are happening in your country. And if you look on the whites of Rhodesia or the whites of South Africa or the British or the Portuguese and you say, oh, well, you made mistakes with the blacks, you did it wrong, etc. I want to warn you, you have no idea how many things whites have tried, not only in Africa, but in all the European colonies. Whites are not stupid, and whites have assessed other races and coexisted with them and dealt with their daily nonsense and realized that there are some problems that you just cannot solve through sweet talking. And you people have been so tolerant, and after World War II and even after your Civil War, you've had lots and lots of human garbage in the form of Jews and then other garbage, and in more recent times you're just being flooded with human crap, basically human excrement from all over the planet. And I just want to warn you that at the end of the day, the thing that makes a nation are the people. And if you think that you can bring some Jews in from Europe and those Jews are suddenly going to perform and they're going to be rocking and rolling and everything's going to be great for you, and that you're going to take some dumbass black from Africa and that he's also just going to rock and roll and become a scientist because the whites in Africa were too stupid, etc. I'm warning you, this stuff doesn't work. Race is real. And humans have a real design, in the same way that you have a pickup truck that has these features, and then you've got a Lamborghini that's got those features, and then you've got a Toyota that's got different features. Humans are like that, and it doesn't matter what you do, you cannot change those things. Those humans have got different IQ, different properties, they've got different cultures, they've got all kinds of issues. And if you think that you can just wish it away, that you're just going to be nice and pleasant about it, and you're going to wish it away, and it's going to go away, you're wrong. This stuff is real. And I do want to add that since World War II, you've had so many Jews coming to the United States. I was reading about German Jews who were fleeing Germany, and at that particular time, America actually had a quota system, and there was a limited quota as to how many Jews can get into America. And then I was reading that some Jews would just go to another country, and then they live in another country, and then from that country they get into America. Jews have been abusing your system and doing all kinds of tricks so that they can pour into your country. And the more you've allowed these people to integrate, you've actually allowed a lot of human garbage to come into your country, and that human garbage, because they are not whites, they do not like America. Even though America has treated them well, they don't like it. They have got their own weirdo concepts of how they want to live. And they have been busy for decades with all kinds of mental poisons. They've been pumping all kinds of mental poison into your country. They've been turning blacks against whites. They've brought violence to America in all kinds of weird ways. They've done all kinds of things that white Americans never used to do. Decades and decades of poison, mental poison, communism, liberalism, all kinds of other weirdo crap has been pumped into your country. It's made its way through to whites. It's made some whites stupid and crazy. It's taken blacks and inflamed their hatred. They have been easily excited by stupid rubbish. And as time goes by, these poisons work on the nation, and your country is now getting really crazy. And all of it pertains to all kinds of weird thinking and clashes between the values that white Americans used to have and that America used to represent versus all this weirdo, creepy junk that has entered the minds of part of your populace. Now people are starting to fight with each other, and people are starting to see America from completely different viewpoints. And this is just Jewish nation wrecking at work. And all these kinds of thoughts, if you go and you look at our history in Africa, you'll see that it was the same thing, that before we started killing each other, there was first a time when there was lots of mental poison that was entering the country, that started turning the races against each other. We were able to function as long as there wasn't that mental poison. Whites were able to control those blacks as long as we could dominate their thinking. But when other people come and they put all kinds of other ideas into those people's heads, those people will turn on you. And with this shooting of Trump, this attempted killing of Trump, it should show you, man, that things are getting wilder and out of control. And just the week before this, I was watching the French election, and in France, Marine Le Pen was totally set to win. She was regarded as someone who's ready to win and to rule France. And you know what happened? All the liberals and the left gathered together, and they focused all their energy on having one representative only. They even had someone whom they hate as the new leader. But the left gathered together, united as one, and managed to defeat Marine Le Pen. Marine Le Pen never saw it coming. So that is just another example that this stuff that's happening between whites across the West, that this fight for the whites and for the white right, this thing is going to be ugly. And the other side, let's call it the Jewish side, is full of tricks and lots of dirty tricks and all kinds of tricks. These people take power seriously, and they are going to go crazy trying to hang on to their liberal and leftist gains. They do not want to see whites win. And I just want to tell you that I have said to Americans before that the reason things are going wrong in America is because you white Americans are losing control of your country. The real issue that is making your country go weird is because you are allowing all kinds of human trash into all kinds of important positions, and you are allowing them to move up through your society. And as they move around and they move to higher positions, whether it's in business or government, they are pumping out their poisons and they're abusing your system. And as white Americans lose control of America, things will just get worse and worse. I don't think that you people are going to be killing each other in the streets next week or next month or next year. I think war is still far away. But long before people actually start killing their neighbors, long before then, the stresses come and the hatreds start building up. And you folks are in that space. That is where you are now. And you've got ruthless enemies who are absolutely desperate to cling on to America. And there's not a dirty trick they're not going to try. You people are living through what happened to the Germans. And you will discover in the fullness of time that whether it's the Germans, whether it's the Boers, whether it's the Rhodesians, whether it's the Portuguese, you will discover that all whites are actually reasonable, and that when other whites have had problems, those same problems can come to you. And there is no country on earth, that is immune to civil war. No country on earth is immune to it. If you pump the right poisons into the minds of people and you get different groups of people stoked up against each other, in time to come, hatred, real hatred, will come. And clearly you folks are there. But like I say, don't worry, you're not going to be killing each other tomorrow. But the real issue is the simmering hatred. And those hatreds are going to get worse and worse as you folks also see the other side playing dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. For the white right to win everywhere, the white right has got to be ruthless. And all of us are going to have to be ruthless. All of us have to be ruthless in the future. And I think it's going to take whites, not only in America, but also in other countries, it's going to take whites quite a few years, maybe 5 or 10 years, before everyone realizes that maybe even the political system isn't working anymore. This thing isn't working. That thing isn't working. Why? Because someone else has been doing things in the meantime. And your country is being taken over quietly and you've not realized it. So these problems are not going to go away. They're only going to get worse. However, there is only one way forward, and that is to push forward and to keep pushing against the other side and to keep on surviving all the tricks of the other side, because it can be done, but it's just going to require that as time goes by, the white right is going to have to get harder and harder and firmer and more ruthless, etc. That's the only way forward. And it's true for us in South Africa as well. Same old thing. That with time, we will have to eventually just take our gloves off and do wild, wild things. That sitting and waiting is not going to be good enough. In time to come, all whites everywhere are going to have to take off the gloves. And I'm afraid that's the way it's going to be. And there is no nice way out of this, because the poison is there. You have a very large part of your society that is filled with all kinds of mental poisons. And those mental poisons cause those people to fight against you and to fight against reality. Most of those poisons are Jewish poisons. And you've got impressionable black Americans who've fallen hook, line, and sinker for all kinds of such poisons. And you've also got other weirdos in your white society who've fallen for the lies and the poisons. These people are going to fight to hang on to their weird, creepy dreams. And they are not going to just let the white right win. They are quite radical and wild. But the good news is they can't kill you all. The good news is they can't win a war against the majority of white Americans. But what they can do is they can make your life miserable, and they can bring pain and suffering into your life and bring all kinds of stresses into your life. So just be aware of those things. But don't think that they're going to kill you, and don't think that they will necessarily win. I reckon all whites everywhere will be able to win. Virtually everyone will be able to win. Just be aware that this problem is a deep problem. You can't solve it with just a quick election one time and the problem goes away. This is a deep problem, and people are going to have to change society. That's the only way. And you got to keep on doing what you are doing. You're going to have to keep on spreading the truth, waking people up, guiding people, etc. Because the problems are deep and the problems are nasty. And it's not just you Americans that suffer from these problems. The rest of us have got it just as bad. We in South Africa have got tons and tons of things that we need to overcome ourselves. So it's nasty, nasty. There's no quick fix. And in time to come, you will realize that guys like Hitler, he was just a reasonable, logical guy, nothing more than that. The Germans were reasonable people. And all those things that they went through, you'll see that we will have to go through a lot of that ourselves. And that includes us in South Africa. There's no quick fix. And I have been indicating that for a long time. There is no quick fix. You just got to do this thing properly and spread the word, educate people, wake people up, get the masses going. That's the only way. So now let me switch over to the topic of Alfred Schaeffer and the Jews. What actually prompted this show was a discussion I was having with a good supporter in South Africa. The supporter and I were talking, and the supporter said, Jews just order governments to do this. The Jews just go and they say to the government, listen, do this, do that, do this, do that. And I said to him that in actual fact, when I look at how the Jews function, it's not quite the way that you think it is. And the reason why I'm honing in on this is because analysis is a critical part of survival and also of this struggle, this racial struggle for our race and our civilization. You see, when you are functioning in, let's call it, activism mode, you need to have your analysis correct, because the more accurate your analysis is, the easier you will find it to counter the enemy. Whereas if your analysis is fuzzy, if your analysis is fuzzy and bad, then you will look at a situation and you'll say, oh, it's hopeless. Oh, it's so hopeless. There are lots of old people in the white right that I know in South Africa and in America who've been in it for decades, and they are so confused now. And the nature of the enemy is such that they think they have an answer. They try to execute something to defeat the enemy. They have some results, but the enemy comes back and defeats them. You need to see life as war. Hitler himself said that life is a struggle, that this is a world of eternal struggle. And this is very important to understand, that when you are dealing with other humans, those humans are competitors, those humans can be enemies, and when you're dealing with Jews, you are dealing with a very specialized, very unique type of enemy. And that is why these people are able to survive for so long. These people do get smashed from time to time by whites. And then whites leave them alone. And then whites don't eradicate them. So then whites feel sorry for them. They hurt them a bit. And then they feel sorry, or other whites feel sorry for them in another nation. And then the whites in the other nation who feel sorry for the Jews, they take the Jews in. And then the Jews get a chance to recoup and to recover and to regain power again. This is an ongoing thing because the problem is not solved properly the first time. But over a period of time, these Jews, being nomadic and being spread out over the world, it gives them a unique ability that if some Jews are taken to task in one country, then there are lots of Jews in other countries who can assist them, help them to escape, and help them to survive again. So what you've got is you've got a special kind of enemy that has a special way of functioning that is different to the way that whites function as nationalists. Whites tend to function inside their own country and they never leave their country. The vast majority of whites never leave their country. And the whites rise or fall according to the situation in their country. But Jews are nomadic, and Jews have the money and the means to be nomadic. And so Jews can't defend themselves directly, and they use other people. I did a whole video about Jewish evolution and the fact that Jews focus all their energy on controlling humans, especially whites. In fact, whites are the humans that Jews are the most successful at. So you are dealing with a very weird enemy that has got very weird ways of working. And it is important for you to know the finer detail of how does this enemy actually work. There are things that we know. We know that Jews are secretive. Jews work in groups. Jews hide what they're doing. And then they hide it and they do their stuff quietly, and it comes out from an unexpected angle, etc. So we know some things about Jews, but there are lots of other things that we don't know about Jews properly. And if you get closer to the detail, the thing that I have found in all my activism, and which is really, really important, is the need to get close to the action. I want to repeat this. You need to get closer to the action. The closer you get to the action, the more you will see. I have found this over the years as I have investigated all kinds of different things, especially here in South Africa. As I have moved around and investigated various things, I have always been surprised by what I discovered when I got close to the action. So if something went down and I went to a place and I started meeting with people, or if something happened in a neighboring state and then I managed to meet whites from that neighboring state and I meet them face to face and I talk to them, then I discover a lot more detail that is very important. So it's nice to have a high-level picture that allows you to sketch out the basic functionality of the Jews. But in order to actually do any kind of activism and any kind of political and social and any other activity to counter the enemy, you actually need to know detail about them. You have to get close to the action. And I have found that whether it is me willingly going and getting closer to the action and looking at a situation, or whether the situation suddenly jumps out and grabs me, that in each case, you actually end up learning a hell of a lot of stuff. And this brings us back to the issue of how do Jews get white people in jail? How is it that whites get into jail. So my South African supporter was saying, well, you know, the Jews just order the government and say to the government, listen, go and jail that guy, go and jail that guy, sort this guy out, kick that guy up his ass, lay charges against him, etc. And his view was that Jews just go and give the government the order and the government does it. In actual fact, the detail is actually different. And in many shows that I've done with Alfred, Alfred has himself observed very closely the Germans, the German police, the state. He's observed them in the police station. He's observed them when they come to his house. He's observed them in the court. He's observed them when he's in jail. And so Alfred has always been very wide awake with regard to his surroundings and drawing conclusions. And it's something that I like a lot about dealing with Alfred Schaefer. Alfred is close to the action, and Alfred makes his own observations. And there are things that Alfred and I have discussed on shows, and there are things that Alfred and I have discussed in private. I did try to get similar levels of detail out of other people, like Alison Chablot, for example. I have asked her for her court documents, and I never got any of the legal documents. So it's unfortunate, because when you get close to the action, you get to see a lot of stuff, and then you start piecing things together. And it's very important from an activist point of view to function in what I would call a military intelligence mode. You need to study the enemy. Rule number one, know your enemy. Know your enemy. Know your enemy in detail. Don't just sit and look at the high-level stuff. Get up close to the enemy. See how the enemy actually functions up close. See how the enemy actually works in the real world. And with these Jews doing all these different things, we can see, for example, that they're exerting control over big corporations and big companies, and they are subverting them, etc., and that Jews get into the top, and then you start seeing all kinds of changes going on. For example, I have been watching Google and YouTube, and years ago, I already published an article that Jews are busy with the greatest censorship in the history of the world on YouTube. YouTube became a prime ground where whites had a chance to put out mountains of data and mountains of analysis. And Jews immediately saw it for what it was. Jews saw that this is going to destroy their game. And Jewry went and engaged on a super, super massive censorship campaign on YouTube. And YouTube is very weird now. However, when I look at something like YouTube, I notice some very interesting things about YouTube now. Have you noticed how many adverts come up on YouTube? Have you noticed how many adverts come up? There are lots more adverts. Even worse, have you actually done some Google searches and looked at the way Google functions compared to the way search engines used to function? When the internet started originally, if you did a Google search or any search on any search engine, if you did a search, then you would actually see all kinds of websites, private websites, where you get matches with what you are actually looking for. So if you went and searched for something, the purpose of the search engine was to point you to a website, regardless of who owned it, and that website would give you the best match to the search you are conducting. However, nowadays, go and look at a Google search, and you will see that the Google search firstly gives you tons and tons of sponsored links. So the first thing Google shows you is basically adverts for companies. And then when you actually go and you scroll down past the sponsored stuff, you will see that, yes, then you get some links, and all of the links are to very soft, mediocre, liberal types of stuff. And the one thing that is absolutely not there are private websites and people who have genuinely unique or different things to say. Long ago, in the early days of the internet, traffic could come to your website in a huge way. In my early days on the internet, people were able to just go onto any search engine. In the early days, let's say in the first 6 or 7 years, people could just go onto the internet, do searches, and then they'd find my website and traffic would come to me. I had lots and lots of traffic coming to me from search engines. I used to monitor it. I look at the search engines nowadays. Search engines always drive you to various companies, corporations, etc. And notice too how the businesses take over and control people. You get businesses that come. Social media was an example. The concept of social media was big corporations coming in, grabbing huge numbers of people, and then putting those people in a bubble and controlling them. Facebook, Twitter, all these things. And at the end of the day, the real people who are driven out are common whites who own websites and blogs and just have their unique thing to say. They are discriminated against by these search engines. And of course, yes, we know Jews are behind all of this. YouTube was a wonderful, fantastic video storage site and a video search engine. YouTube used to have the most brilliant search engine you could get. That search engine has been messed with a lot. Google used to be a wonderful search engine across the web, and that thing's been messed with. Now you've got all kinds of junk concepts like sensitivity and this and that. You can't see it because it's sensitive. Long time ago, you could go and get crime scene photos, murder photos in the raw, including videos. There used to be a website that did gore, and some of it was really, really horrific, but it was very useful because it is a place that stores stuff that happens in the real world. And those things have been taken away. All of those things are gone. The internet's becoming more and more a closed book. And the internet is becoming less and less about free speech. The internet is being quietly squashed by mainly Jewry, but other forces as well. So the internet was a fantastic invention. But go and look at Google and YouTube now, and I will bet you that both Google and YouTube have lost huge amounts of money. They've lost huge amounts of money because of the censorship and the weird changes they've had to put in due to the presence of Jewry. So the good news about Google and YouTube is that they must have lost huge amounts of money. And so now all you see is advertising everywhere. Long ago, they didn't need to do that. Google had the greatest form of income of anyone on the internet when they created Google Ads. I used to use Google Ads, and for a year or two, I even made some money out of Google Ads. But they then introduced censorship onto Google Ads. And I know other people who just ran normal businesses and they used Google Ads. Google was earning billions of dollars out of these Google Ads. They're the biggest money-making machine on the internet. But all of that has gone away because they've engaged in censorship. And it pleases me tremendously to see them losing money, big money. because of this. So ultimately, Jews come at a price. Jews come at a price. They come and they get their way, but it hurts the very people that they are managing to strike a deal with. So that's an observation you must keep in the back of your head, that Jews can get their way, but the people that they strike deals with also end up taking losses. That is good news. So keep that in the back of your mind. But let's get back to how things start at a lower level for common people. How is it that Jews get to individuals and get them into court? So when I was talking to my good supporter, I said to him that, you know what, it doesn't really work the way that you say, that the Jews go to the government and the government gives the orders. It doesn't actually work that way. Because when the Jews came after me to get me into court, the way it really worked was that the local Jewish organization went to the police, and the Jewish organization went to the cops and laid charges against me. But I knew at the time that Jews, that this same Jewish organization had been laying charges against lots and lots of other people. In fact, lots of their charges are actually against non-whites even, because there are lots of non-whites in South Africa who are against Israel. So the Jews would go to the cops and then lay charges there, and that was how they were getting people in South Africa into court. And then the Jews were using the media to then publicize what was happening in court. So they actually had two angles that they functioned on. The one is a link into the court system by using the laws of the land. And the next thing is that they have access to a media outlet. In this case, it was a big Afrikaans news media outlet that was their mouthpiece, that they had links to. They had certain Jews working in there, and they were pushing their Jew stuff out through there. So that is the way the Jews did it in South Africa. And that's what I saw from my own experience. So then I said to my supporter, I said to him, look, that's how this thing worked with me. And I'll bet you that something similar has happened to others. Then I said to him, you know, I haven't asked Alfred Schaefer how it went for him, but I'll bet you that if we talk to Alfred Schaefer, we'll find out that it wasn't really the German government that was going after him. Now, you need to understand that we need to know very accurately how things work, because when we understand how things work, that is then going to show us the methods by which we can counter Jews. So once you understand that, listen, this thing works in this way, then you might be able to say, if it works in this way, then maybe we can do that thing. Because the thing that I noticed about a lot of the older people in the movement was that people reached a point where they were confused and they couldn't understand why they were losing, and they couldn't figure out a proper method of countering it. And when I dealt with people directly, I began to see more and more examples of how people actually get things done in society. And that includes people who've got money and businesses. They have got a lot more power than the common man, and how do they get things done? And then you start to see the links between different groups and organizations and people, and then you'll see the actual mechanics of how things actually work. And just knowing how it works will enable you more easily to tap into that mechanism and to know, in order to win, we need to be able to stop this. We might just need someone with this kind of skill and we'll be able to stop this or control this. And that's what I'm trying to get to in this video. So I said to my supporter that I'm willing to bet him that even though the German government is supposed to be anti-Nazi and supposed to be anti-Semitic, that in reality, those Germans aren't really that interested in doing this. They have had this forced on them by the United States and the British and the, quotes, good allies of World War II. But in reality, the Germans probably really don't want to do this. They don't really want to go and jail other Germans. And so I decided to ask Alfred, how was it that he got into court and into jail? What were the things that caused him to have the police come to his door that caused him to end up in court? And Alfred's answer was very interesting. There were two things that happened. The first is that Jews in Canada, a Jewish organization in Canada named B'nai B'rith, was the organization that targeted Alfred. And it is very interesting that Jews in Canada were the ones who looked at how can they harm Alfred Schaeffer. And these Jews actually came out and talked about what they are doing and how they are doing it. And it turns out that this B'nai B'rith organization is a very old Jewish organization. This thing has been around for a long time. It's even older than the ADL, and it exists in various countries. And even David Irving, the historian and hero David Irving, mentioned B'nai B'rith intervening in his trials when he was up against a lying Jewish hag and the Jews pumped $30 million into the court case in order to defeat one white Aryan man, aka David Irving. These Jews have got organizations, and they've got lots of organizations, and they've got weird organizations, and they pump money into them. I remember when I was talking to my Jewish friend, the topic of Jewish organizations came up, and my Jewish friend started telling me about how many Jewish organizations exist. And the number of Jews in South Africa at that time was less than 200,000. And yet there were hundreds and hundreds of Jewish organizations. Many of these Jewish organizations are like one-man band types of things. But Jews give generously to their own organizations. You could say that Jews, among themselves, practice a form of socialism and teamwork. And wealthy Jews will give to lots of other Jewish organizations. Jews must have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of organizations across the world. They have got vast, vast quantities of organizations. Some of their organizations would amaze you. I remember my Jewish friend even telling me that there was a Jewish organization that would help a woman get a wedding dress for her wedding if she couldn't afford a wedding dress, something like that. You'd be amazed at all the kinds of little things that Jews have got organizations for. And so if someone wants something, then they just go into their network, and their network's got all kinds of things. And if you look, because of the weirdness of Jews and all the criminal activity and dodgy activity of the Jews, you'll see the Jews have got specialized organizations that you wouldn't even think of. How about the Hebrew Immigrant Society? The Hebrew Immigrant Society is initially an organization to allow filthy Jew rat scum who have caused problems and committed crimes and undermined countries, and they're busy fleeing the country that they have done harm to. The Hebrew Immigrant Society is there to help those Jew rat scum get out of that country and get into another country. That's what the Jewish organization is for. So they've got all kinds of weird Jewish organizations. And then they're like, oh, you see, we're for peace and we're here to help people. And all we're doing is helping people. Well, they're actually a front for helping to get Jewish criminal scum out of one place to another. My apologies. I actually had been talking about the Hebrew Immigrant Society all along, when in fact I meant HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. That's what it's called. That's the bunch that Brent and Mike pointed out are the bastards who are busy bringing non-whites into America. If you will take a look at the image on the screen in front of you, on the top is an advert from 1925 for this Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. It says Hebrew Sheltering and Immigrant Aid Society of America. And you can see even famous Jews like Dr. Stephen Wise is there. And it's based in New York. What I quickly went and did was I went on to Wikipedia to look for Jewish organizations. And here's a list of the big ones. But just look at some of these ones that are here. And when I looked around, I could see that actually you're not seeing even 1% of the actual Jewish organizations. Jewish organizations exist by the thousands. If you had to look around the world, you would find more Jewish organizations than you can even begin to believe. But just take a look at some of this stuff. You won't believe some of these things. Alliance of Rabbis in Islamic States. There's a bunch of others. There's B'nai B'rith. There's even B'nai B'rith in Latin America. Then you can see Chabad, that's Tunnel Jews. Then check down here. This blew my mind. European Jewish Fund, but this one blew my mind. European Jewish Parliament? What the hell is that? European Jewish Parliament? Imagine if white people in Europe went and created a thing and said European White Parliament. Well, everyone on the planet would go berserk, Jews especially. But you can have European Jewish Parliament and nobody says a word. Then you see, look at that, Federation of Jewish Communities in Spain, Federation of Jewish Communities of the CIS, don't know where that is, International Rabbinic Fellowship, and all kinds of other things, World Jewish Congress, World Organization of Jews from Arab Countries, World Zionist Organization, Union for Progressive Judaism, Union of Jewish Congregations of Latin America and the Caribbean. So you've got some things that are big and some things that you wouldn't even expect. There's tons of stuff you wouldn't expect. And then there are things like that, what's that, Karen High Sod. What the heck is that? Now, that's just a little bit. I must tell you that I've gone and I've done a bit of a search. You literally have to go and do a search by country, and then you'll find even more Jewish organizations. I want to tell you that despite the ones that you can see, first of all, you're going to find more Jewish organizations than you can believe. But secondly, when I think of what my Jewish friend told me, I want to tell you there are mountains of Jewish organizations that you've never heard of. You will not even see them anywhere on the internet. Because when he was telling me about Jewish organizations in South Africa, I just about fell on my back. And that was when the Jewish population was already down to 75,000. There have got to be tens of thousands. I'm not exaggerating when I say tens of thousands of Jewish organizations. And you don't know what kind of nefarious nonsense is hidden behind these names. So you'll have some Jewish organization, Hebrew Sheltering and Immigrant Aid Society. That's all we do. We're just helping the poor and the struggling, etc. You don't know what these bastards might do for Jews that are criminals, etc., etc. You do not know what they get up to. So underneath this stuff is hidden. You are looking at just a little bit of the outside of Jewry, and hidden on the inside is a ton more stuff. There's a lot more stuff in there. And of course, you've never heard of 99.9% of these organizations. There are tons of these things around. Tons of these things. And when I listened to my Jewish friend, he was giving me names and telling me about organizations, some of which are one-man bands. You could see it's just like one person or two people running this thing. They have got all kinds of stuff that they do, and they network with each other in ways that you cannot even imagine. It is under these things, under all these things, that's where the real action is going on. But you're not going to read about it in the New York Times. These people are interacting with each other in ways that you cannot even imagine, and in ways that will never be out there in public. And I am sure that we don't even know a fraction of the details about all the different weird things that exists inside the Jewish network. The Jewish network must have lots and lots and lots of things that whites would never even think of, that there are specialist Jews who can do this thing, who can do that thing. In the past, when I was reading about Jews, I saw all kinds of things, like you could get a Jew who's about to be put on trial for pedophilia in America, and boom, you'll see the Jew just goes. And the next thing is the Jew is in a European country and he can't be extradited from that country. There was also an interesting story I read about a Jewish hag in New York. She ran a $200 million criminal scheme. She ran a $200 million criminal scheme. And then when the cops wanted to nab her, she clearly had all her links. She had her links and spies in the police system, so that when the time came, when the cops decided they needed to arrest her, like just before they moved to arrest her, she was tipped off and she just popped across the border into Canada and they couldn't touch her. And there she is. She got away with it. I noticed that tons and tons of things that I saw in the past, and when I say the past, I'm talking 5 to 10 years ago, tons and tons of things that were on websites has been removed from websites. You can't find that stuff anymore. I saved lots of stuff away, and I still have stuff in my databases that I've not put out yet. Before I did the current website that you know as History Reviewed, I had a smaller version of History Reviewed, and that smaller version had lots and lots of stories about Jews, and I ran it for like about 4 or 5 years, and I need to actually get that database out, because there's all kinds of interesting stories that have since disappeared from the internet. And Jews are much more careful nowadays about the kinds of stuff that is printed about Jews. They are removing things left, right, and center all the time. They are monitoring the whole internet, and they are looking for stuff. Now, in the case of Alison Chablot, there's a Jewish organization, I think a Jewish Board of Deputies in Britain or something similar to that, and that is the organization that was focusing on Alison Chablot. But it's very useful when you get a chance to see how the Jews function. And Alfred Schaefer sent me a link to a little video where B'nai B'rith in Canada explained what they were doing, and we're going to look at that shortly. It is very possible that because of the hero Ernst Zundel in Canada, the original guy who started fighting the Jews in Canada and who was a publisher, that it is because of Ernst Zundel's activity that the Jews in Canada are watching anyone who's Canadian. So all white Canadians are being observed by the Jewish scum who live inside Canada. So what you'll see is that the Canadian Jews, all of them are working as a team against the, quotes, Nazis in Canada. And that is probably why the activities of Alfred and Monica Schaefer were homed in on so quickly, because they are Canadians. But Alfred had moved to Germany and was living in Germany and was a German citizen. So now these, let's call it, practiced Jewish organizations in Canada then target Alfred, even though he's in another country. And that shows you their network in action, their network in action from Canada to Germany and how they get Alfred. So here's the little video where B'nai B'rith in Canada actually talk. And there's some very interesting things in this little video. So watch it. I want to discuss it.
In his videos, Canadian Alfred Schaefer engages in anti-Semitism.
The Jews wanted to exterminate the German people.
And denies the Holocaust, something he could do in Canada. In Germany, where Schaefer lives, Holocaust denial is illegal.
The German Ministry of Forbidden Thoughts sent the Kriminalpolizei, which is like the FBI, to raid our house in order to steal all of my computers and storage devices.
Good morning, B'nai B'rith. Amanda speaking.
B'nai B'rith, Canada's national director, says calls to their hate line alerted them to Schaefer's videos a few months ago.
When we became aware, we went to our contacts and made the authorities in Germany aware of it.
Canada's hate speech laws are weaker than several jurisdictions.
Secure homeland for the white race.
This Canadian's video can be viewed here, but has been blocked from YouTube in close to 24 countries. Still, Amanda Holman says the real issue is a lack of enforcement of the laws Canada does have.
They're really rarely enforced, and charges are really rarely laid, and then when charges are laid, it's almost impossible to get a conviction.
In the last 5 years in Ontario, there have been 17 charges laid under incitement or promotion of hatred. Of those, there's been one conviction, one going to trial, and the rest dismissed or withdrawn. Holman says law enforcement has to do more, as words can lead to action.
It doesn't usually end at speech.
In contrast, the Canadian Civil Liberties Association says the current legal approach goes far enough, only engaging once speech crosses the line from hatred to inciting violence.
We have often stood up for the right of people to say horrible, odious things that we disagree with, because we think that a free democracy requires freedom of expression, because the opposite is censorship.
Meanwhile, Schaefer shows no signs of backing down.
These world wars, we now know, were engineered by Jews.
He has not yet responded to an interview request. Christina Stevens, Global News.
That was a short video, but there's a lot to unpack there. And I want to go through it in detail, because we need to get down to the detail of what is actually going on. What I did like about that news report was I liked the way that they actually had Alfred Schaefer on there saying his thing. And it's awesome. It's freaking awesome. So where Alfred's saying Jews wanted to exterminate the German people, etc. All excellent stuff. And Alfred not backing down. All excellent, excellent stuff. But now the key is B'nai B'rith. How does B'nai B'rith function? How was it that Alfred, who now lives in Germany, how come he ends up in jail? What is the mechanism for that? You will have seen that in one of Alfred's videos after that, he said the German Ministry of Forbidden Thought sent the police to his house. And he said it's an organization like the FBI. But how was it that those German cops ended up at Alfred's house? Well, it's similar to what happened to me. The cops may be arriving, but it wasn't the cops that decided to come to see me because I'm breaking a law. And it's the same with Alfred. The real driving force are the Jews. So the B'nai B'rith National Director, she says that how B'nai B'rith Canada got to know about Schaefer was calls to their hate line from Jews. So Canadian Jews are busy looking at things on the internet, seeing what is moving around society, seeing what people are sharing, see what is on YouTube, and then they see, there's this video. This video is going viral. You see, these Jews are looking around and things that they don't like, things that they realize can be their undoing, things that they see as threats to themselves. They see these things and they start sharing it with other Jews. And they're like, our nonsense is being challenged, etc. The Goyim are waking up, kind of thing. And now, what do? They phone their organization's hotline. Oh, there's hate. And the hate is coming from Alfred and Monica Schaefer. There's hate coming from them. Monica's video, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, that video went particularly viral. And so what you've got here are that Jews, common Jews, are all spies. Jews, as they are moving through white society, as few as there are of them, they are coming into contact with mainly whites, in this case, white Canadians. So a normal Jew going about his business will be going to the shop, going to work. He's going to be in touch with 20 or 30 or however many whites in a particular day or week. He's in touch with lots of whites. He is an alien living in a white society. Canada is a white society. And this Jew is moving around as an alien in this white society. And so those whites are open and happy, and they are happy with the way they work and function. And they see and think and share things for themselves with each other. And there are many of them who are going to have Jewish friends, and they're going to share it with a Jew. And they may even think, this is a good friend of mine, this Jew named Joe. And, he's going to be wanting to see this thing, and I pass it on to him. Meanwhile, when the Jew gets it, the Jew opens it and he's like, this is anti-Semitism. And I've defined anti-Semitism before. Anti-Semitism is basically anything that is a threat to Jews. It is basically whatever the Jews perceive as an enemy. So the Jews would open the video and they'll see, these are the Schaefers. It's either Alfred Schaefer or Monica Schaefer. Oh, look at what they're saying. They're enemies, and it's going to threaten us. And your big problem is you are living in your own society, and the vast majority of people are whites. Canada's a white country, just like America, okay? There may be some minorities in there, but there are very few. These are white countries dominated by whites. Whites make up 90% or more of the population, or used to. So these people are simply just going about their lives normally. However, things that are normal for the whites may be seen by the Jews correctly as a threat to Jewry, because the Jewish house of cards is actually a very fragile thing, and it's based on lies and bullshit and that kind of stuff. So for whites would say, look at this. This is an interesting thing. The whites might not even have any hard, firm conclusions or desires to do anything. But the Jews, aware of their house of cards and how their house of cards can be crushed, they will immediately say, oh, you see here, that truth is spreading about us. Or they may even call it a lie when it's the truth. And they'll say, oh, that thing is being spread about us. That thing is going to be our undoing. Okay. And so here you got these Jews in Canada, and B'nai B'rith, by being a big player in the Jewish community, is now basically the CIA of the Jews. It is a spy organization, and all the Jews are the spies. And here's where you have the downside of the so-called good Jews. There are probably many, many whites in Canada who had Jewish friends, and when they spread things, they may have spread things to a bunch of their friends, and one of those friends may have been a Jew. And they would happily spread it to the Jew because they think, like I used to think, that Jews are just other white people, and they're not. And in this way, by being friendly and having, quote, good Jews around you, it could easily be, in fact, I would be certain that the way that it really works is that the Jew may have received that video. Many Jews would have received that video. They won't tell their white friends that they don't like this or that this is a threat. What they will do instead is quietly, secretly, they will go and phone the B'nai B'rith hotline. Oh, listen, we got this video, and there are these hateful, anti-Semitic, Schaefer scum people. So that is how this thing really is going to work. What this means is that you have a white society that is quite happy with itself, and the whites are talking, and they're doing their little thing, and they got their friends, and they're doing stuff. Little do they perceive the sickness that resides within them, that there's an alien nation inside of them, and that it doesn't matter whether those aliens keep quiet or not. The fact is, they are spies for an alien entity. So now, these Jews are like quietly all phoning the hotline. Oh, there's this Schaefer issue, and you know, a dozen or 100 or however many Jews are busy phoning in, and they are saying, listen, this thing is bad. And then all the Jews are like looking at this, including, of course, the B'nai B'rith organization head, and they're looking at this, and they know, oh, yes, this thing can break us. This thing can become a problem. If these people get more popular, then this can destroy us. And we may have to flee from Canada. They know, okay? And so the first thing you must realize is whether you got one Jew or 1,000 Jews or 1,000,000 Jews, you've got an alien entity. And every Jew, no matter how, quote, good and friendly he appears to be, every Jew is a spy for Jews. And Jews have got a structure inside your country. I've said it before, they are an apartheid state. Jews have got their own state inside your state. They've got lots of things. I've mentioned before the fact that Jews have got their own courts, that Jews have got all kinds of weird things that they do inside your country and you don't even notice. There's even weird, quotes, religious garbage, like putting up boundaries inside cities, etc. I've mentioned all these things before. So you've got an alien entity that's sitting inside your country, and that alien entity functions, and that's how it functions. Every Jew is really a spy for Jews, and they know their structure. You don't even know their structure exists. You don't even know their network exists. You don't even know who runs that network and who's talking to who. They know it. I can tell you that when I look at like my court documents, for example, when the Jews came after me, My last contact with any Jews had been several years before. It had been like 8 years previously. And suddenly the cops are pitching up at my door. And I'm looking at all the details and I'm seeing, look at the phone number they've got for me. That phone number is no longer valid, but that phone number was valid like 5 or 8 years ago. Clearly, the Jews must have sent an email to all other Jews, and Jews had been sharing details where Jews were probably saying, listen, we need to corner this guy. Does anybody know his address? Does anybody have his contact details, etc.? And then probably Jews who knew me then forwarded that information to the Jew organization, and that's how they know exactly where I am. But now let's look at what B'nai B'rith then said about how they functioned. B'nai B'rith says, when we became aware of these shafers, we went to our contacts and made the authorities in Germany aware of it. So here you've got it directly that the Jews have got their contacts somewhere in Germany, whether it's B'nai B'rith in Germany or some other bunch of Jews in Germany, but they have got their network in Germany. So now you've got Canadian Jews talking to German Jews. And so B'nai B'rith says, Canada's hate speech laws are weaker than in several jurisdictions. But the real issue is these Jews are now looking to see how can they harm these anti-Semites. So these Jews are clearly, they would rather love to have taken like Monica Schaefer, who's a Canadian citizen, and tossed her in jail, or better still, executed her. If you go and you look, in the Soviet Union, white people were executed for the fake crime of anti-Semitism. So these Jews, knowing the fragility of their setup, these Jews know that these whites who are just talking about the truth and who are not particularly aggressive or anything, that this can be their undoing. So they would like to nail Monica Schaefer in Canada. But what's the problem? The problem is Canadian laws do not criminalize anti-Semitism. But then they see, aha, the brother is in Germany and it's illegal there. So then they go and they contact the Germans. They say, the German Jews, and they say to them, look, here's a guy and he's breaking German law. Now, the German state, all the states, all these governments, they have got things that they are bound to. That is why there are laws. The German government cannot now say that they're not going to prosecute anti-Semitism. It is written in the law and they have to prosecute it. So it is clear that these Canadian Jews got their contacts, aka Jews in Germany, to then start the process in Germany. And if I understand correctly from Alfred Schaefer, these Canadian Jews even wrote a letter that ended up in court. Alfred even saw a letter that came from B'nai B'rith in Canada. I think something like that happened. So there you can see the actual mechanism of how it goes. So then they got Jews in Germany who know how Germany works, and these Canadian Jews send their quotes, evidence, and Jews in Germany then obviously act as their agents, and they go to the cops, and they say, oh, you see, there's this crime being committed. A crime is being committed by this Alfred Schaefer. He's committing the fake crime of Holocaust denial, etc., etc. You need to arrest him. Now the whites are bound by their own laws to carry those laws out, and hence the German police now have to come. The German government's not even involved in this. The German government is busy functioning, but the Jews are using the courts and the cops to nail white people. Because the Jews have got agents in every country. They know the laws of every country. Rest assured that B'nai B'rith has got access to good lawyers, Jew lawyers who know the law. They've got Jew lawyers who know the law in Germany. So they know, okay, we can't jail Monica Schaefer in Canada, but we can jail Alfred in Germany. Let's go for it. And that is how they are using the law. And if you looked carefully at that video, you would have seen Brian Rue was on there talking about a white state. And you would have seen Sinead McCarthy of Renegade on there. And you will have seen that Brian Rue's video was blocked in 24 countries. I had exactly the same thing. In the end, by the time they threw me off YouTube, I'd had 800 legal complaints. And those legal complaints all came from Europe. And I was blocked in about 6 different European countries constantly. Germany was one of them, but there's a bunch of them. There's like France and so forth. Can't remember all the names. But there's a bunch of European countries where anti-Semitism is an issue and they blocked me constantly. And I'm convinced from my interactions with YouTube that what was actually happening was that there were Jewish lawyers who were submitting legal complaints to YouTube. And by the time they drove me off YouTube, there was 800 legal letters. It was probably at least 800 or more legal letters written by Jews to YouTube, probably threatening YouTube with court actions. That's probably what is really going on behind the scene. That's why these videos end up being blocked. So Jews are floating around. They know the legal systems of all the different white countries and they abuse those systems and they use those systems to their advantage. And that is one thing that I picked up a lot with my Jewish friend. When I used to speak to him, I could see that Jews know our systems better than us. And Jews who've gone higher in the system then tell other Jews how the system functions. And the Jews also figure out their workarounds and their ways, their hacks, or as I would say in South African lingo, their jippos around our systems. How do you go further? How can you corrupt someone, etc.? So they've got all these mechanisms that they are using, and you'll see all Jewish mechanisms are mostly human to human. And it's Jews who use our stuff to live off and Jews tap into our stuff to harm us. So, for example, in the case of Canada, B'nai B'rith said, the real problem is the lack of Canadian enforcement of the laws Canada does have. They really rarely are enforced and charges are really rarely laid. And when charges are laid, it is almost impossible to get a conviction. Then they gave us an example, Ontario. In 5 years, there were 17 charges, 1 conviction, 1 went to trial, and 15 were dismissed or withdrawn. So B'nai B'rith went on to say, law enforcement needs to do more. When I was looking at the various charges that they laid against me, because they laid multiple charges against me, but prior to laying charges against me, the Jews actually went on a massive spree here in South Africa to lay charges against lots of people. They were going to the cops and they had found a particular law. Now, let me explain. You see, in Germany, the Germans have got these Holocaust denial garbage laws. But every country's got its strengths and weaknesses. And the Jews had found a particular law in South Africa, a criminal law that they tried to abuse. So they found a law called crimen injuria. And the Jews would go and whenever they didn't like anyone, They would just go and lay charges of crimen injuria against that person. So that was like the first thing that I got. But by the time I got it, they'd already laid those charges against a bunch of other people, lots of other people. They'd actually been at it for years. And one of the people was a girl that they referred to as the Hitler Barbie. And later on, as I got deeper into the court cases and as I was getting more familiar with the police processes and court processes, at a point, using a Jewish legal document and talking to my lawyer, I went and I actually managed to draw the police file of the Hitler Barbie girl. And I actually got her case documents. The Hitler Barbie was a white Afrikaans girl and she was destroyed. She went to ground, she ran away, she hid away, she lost her bit of income that she was getting. So just by making that threat on that white girl in Pretoria, they destroyed her. They destroyed her, they knocked her out, she was out of the game. But I managed to get hold of her documents because it related to something that was mentioned in my documents. So because I saw stuff that they were quoting in their documents, I was able to go and get this. So I got it from the cops and I could see what the Jews were writing about this girl. And also I could compare what they were writing to the cops about her and to me. And in the Jewish letters, they were saying to the police, you really need to investigate this stuff, you know, you really need to do more kind of thing. And the Jews are putting pressure on the cops to go and do more on these so-called crimes. And that is really the game that was going on here. So they latch on to a law. Now, that law doesn't really favor the Jews much, but it's the closest thing that the Jewish attorneys can find that they can hit people with. So what they do is they go and they lay charges against dozens of people in South Africa. They go and they lay a whole bunch of charges. They run off to the police station and the Jews file charges against this person, that person, that person, that person. Mostly it scares the people. It scares the people into silence. And most people don't go to court and most people run away or shut up once the cops have visited them. All it takes is a visit from the cops with these papers and these claims, and then people start running to ground and most people are silenced. And like I say, this white girl who was one of the victims of this campaign, she just went to ground and disappeared because clearly she wasn't up to being able to fight the Jews in court. And the Jews are using and looking at all the laws that exist. And rest assured, Jewish attorneys and Jewish politicians are manipulating those laws. And they're saying, okay, if we tweak this law, we might be able to use this law and that law. They abuse our systems. So our laws are things that we've come up with that we think are necessary. But now you've got this alien entity that's living inside your country. And the alien entity needs more stuff that it can leverage. And the alien entity then says, well, we need to engage the police more and see if the police will do more. And if the police don't do more, then we need to speak to the politicians or we're going to need to pay someone off. So the alien entity inside your country is manipulating your country and manipulating all the different people in different parts of your government and your state services. So for example, the Jews are saying, well, you know, Canada's got laws, but they don't really enforce them. Why not? Well, I'll tell you why not. Because those whites and those cops and those lawyers and those judges probably don't see those laws as being very important and that they've got much more important things that are really worth investigating and using state resources to combat. So they're more interested in crime and theft and murder and things that really matter. instead of, you know, whether someone came and said, fuck you, Jew, you know. So they are looking at things that are important. And now you are seeing that what is important to Jews is not the same as what is important to whites. Jewish priorities are different. You could also say Jews live in a bubble. Jews live in a bubble of privilege. Jews live in a bubble and they have got their requirements. They've got their things that are important to them. Their ideas of what is a threat to them is different to what is a threat to whites. If someone went to a white person and said, hey, fuck you, you know, a white person will fob it off, probably say, fuck you too, and move on, and everyone will forget about it. But the Jews, for the Jews are well aware of the vulnerabilities of their weak Jewish house of cards. And they know that if the whites start waking up, that house of cards is coming down. So they are much more paranoid. Jews are much more paranoid as a people than anyone on the planet. And to them, all kinds of things are signs of threats because these troublemakers have been smacked by whites many times in the past in Europe. So you've already got, between whites and Jews, you've got two different views of what is very important. And even the Canadian Civil Liberties Association says that the current legal approach goes far enough and that there is a need and a right for people in a democracy to be able to say odious things about other people, even if you disagree with it, because freedom of expression is more important than censorship. They are looking at the big picture and they're saying, what happens if we censor everything? If we censor everything, is that going to be good for the country? And the Canadians, like the Americans, like the vast majority of whites, turn around and say, no, that freedom of expression is really, really important. And that if you want a healthy country, you need to be able to say things. And we cannot put too many restrictions on what you can say because those things that you say might be odious to people, but it may be valuable and healthy for the society, for the nation. So white people function like that. But Jews will look and see, okay, whites are willing to let this go. But for us, we are more vulnerable. We can be brought down. Now, why can they be brought down? Mostly because virtually everything that their state and their society is based on a pack of lies. So the problem is that white people seek the truth and white people seek reality, and that once someone starts scratching the surface of the Jew and they see, oh, there's a lie here, then to us, lies are outrageous. We don't like lies. We want the truth. It's a natural human thing among whites, okay? So once we scratch the surface, then we say, hey, we found a lie. Oh, God, there's this huge lie, or there's part of a lie. Let's go look some more. And before long, when enough whites start scratching, they'll scratch out all the lies, and they'll all be aghast at what lies in their midst. The Jews know that when the scratching starts, that this is the beginning of the end. So here are the Jews. Oh, we're living in a democracy. But next thing you know is Jews just want censorship, 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 censorship. Why? Because all of Jewish stuff is based on a lie. Virtually everything about the race of rats is based on a lie. And so for them, their society is very fragile, and the existence of the lie is something that is obnoxious to whites because we prefer the truth and we seek the truth. And so whenever whites start scratching into the Jew issue, it's just a matter of time before the whole freaking thing unravels. And that is why they are so paranoid, and why they are so paranoid at the slightest sign of something. So they are an alien entity. They are an alien entity that live among people they see as their enemies, and they treat them as enemies. But this is also a really nice place to live. These Jews are living in Canada and Germany and America and all these countries and South Africa. They're living here because life is good, okay? Life is good. That's why they're here. They're not here because they love us. They are here because they want money and they want to live well. But they live well in a place that can turn on them. When the reality about them comes out and all their nefarious nonsense comes out, the entire population can turn on them and it scares them. So that is really what's going on here. And so these Jews need to be like walking on eggshells, jumping around. Oh God, did you see somebody found out something about the Nazis or about the Spanish or about the this and the that? All of that stuff, okay? All of that stuff is how the Jews know the fragility of their own society. So they have to hide their stuff. If they don't hide, they will easily be decimated by the whites in that country. Their system is a very, very fragile house of cards. And that is a very important thing. So among the things from this as takeaways is the fragility of the Jews, the fact that they are very fragile because their system is a system based on lies and weirdness. But the other side of the coin is that in order to live in these countries, they have to come and fake it. They have to fake everything. Because they want the benefits. They want the benefits of the country. They aren't there because they love Canadians or they love Germans. They don't give a rat's ass. They are there. This is a state that moves into another state. It is a state that cannot function by itself. It comes and it colonizes whites. And it's like a cancer. It's like a cancer that enters your body. And as the cancer enters your body and it settles down, it starts growing. But as it's growing inside your body, it's starting to cause problems. And the growth of that entity, as it gains power and wealth inside your state, it causes those Jews to come into conflict with the local whites. And that is all that happens again and again and again wherever Jews live. The parasite is a cancer, and eventually the cancer starts coming and clashing with the very body that it lives inside. But for this state within a state, this hidden Jewish state to exist inside white countries, it takes on a certain form. And here you are getting an insight into how this entity functions. And it's got lots and lots of hidden aspects to it. As it reaches out and some Jew makes friends with a politician, another Jew corrupts another white guy, etc. It infects whites and it creates all kinds of issues. This Jewish-white issue is a racial issue. Just like Hitler said, it's a racial issue and it will always come out. Eventually, this thing cannot function anymore. Eventually, there is the clash between the cancer within versus the survival of the state. And the cancer within is trying to gain control of the body that it is taking over. Just like I did in that video about human evolution and Jews, about parasites that take control of the minds of animals and insects. That's what Jews are trying to do. They don't want to kill the body because killing the body would kill their ability to live. They need, as a parasite, to live inside the body. But what they're trying to do is trying to get control of the body. And it is in that process, as they get stronger, You see, when they infect the body in the beginning, there aren't many of them and they don't have much power. But as the decades go by, their power increases and increases. And as they do more and more stuff and they get more powerful, they come into more conflict with the body. And eventually it becomes a fight between the Jewish cancer and the body itself, the white body that is trying to exist, and the clash will come. And it also shows you that the clash is inevitable. It has to come at some point, because as the Jewish cancer grows in strength, the clash will come. It will come. But in order for it to function, like I've said before, Jews aren't doing all the hard stuff that creates the state. Jews come and colonize when they see the state is doing well. And then their mechanisms are all about manipulating the humans among which they live. And they use those humans to combat other humans. So they use whites to fight other whites. And that is how this entity functions. But because they are global, the Jewish cancer in one society can reach out to a Jewish cancer in another society and harm white people in other countries. If you look at the Jews closely, you'll notice that the Jews have an insistence on living in European countries, especially European countries. You'll see, like, the World Jewish Congress goes and has meetings in different countries all the time. And you'll see it's European countries, it's Western countries. Those Jews are actually like marking their territory and conditioning those whites to accept them. And then if anybody were to turn around and say, we don't want Jews here, or we ban Jews, then you'll see the Jews freaking out, shrieking like crazy. All the Jews of the world will go totally wild against, you know, one little nation that says, hey, you know, we've had enough of this Jew nonsense. You know, the same kind of thing that Hitler did, just standing up for your own nation and your stuff. And then all the Jews of the world go insanely wild and they want to now smash and murder and kill everybody in that state. Okay. That's all that this thing is about. Another thing about Alfred Schaeffer, which I didn't ask him in this show, was that his sister, Monica, went to Germany. And when she got to Germany, they nabbed her. The cops nabbed her. So there as well, I'd have to go and ask Alfred what the mechanism was there. But rest assured, the Jewish spy network was at work, and the Jewish spy network no doubt knew that Monica Schaeffer was going to Germany, and then they pulled the strings, and the next thing is Monica Schaeffer is arrested. She was tossed into jail. She was in jail for a couple of months. Then she got out, and the moment she got out, she did the wise thing, and she split out of Germany, got the hell out of Germany. But look at how dreadful it is that Monica Schaeffer, who is a German, has to now be careful of laws in Germany. Why? Because these Jews have got tentacles into Germany. And what you've got is you've got the state. The state has to operate on its laws. And of course, the Germans are not really free. The correct thing would be if the Germans could be free and if they could close down these Holocaust denial laws. The Germans really need to get rid of all this Holocaust denial stuff. All Europeans should actually be getting these Holocaust denial laws removed from the law books. That's the real thing that needs to happen here, is all this Holocaust denial stuff has to be removed. When you can remove those Holocaust denial laws, then the whites will be fine. Then the Jews won't have that mechanism to hit you with that thing. They'll have to invent some other mechanism. In the past, Jews also had their own criminals, Jews also had their own murderers, etc. So maybe Jews would have to try and return to that kind of thing if they can't use the courts. But that'll give you an idea of how this crazy lunatic rubbish works. But the big thing in the West, especially in Europe, and sadly it was forced on Europe by the quotes allies, is Holocaust denial, that there are all these special laws that protect Jews. You could call it Jewish privilege laws. There are Jewish privilege laws, especially in Europe, where white people cannot say what they want to say. And I really liked the way the Canadian Civil Liberties Organization stood up and said, you know what, the current legal approach is good enough. Because, as you can see, B'nai B'rith was saying, oh, you know, in the state of Ontario, in 5 years, there were only 17 charges. We only got one conviction and 15 were dismissed or withdrawn. Well, rest assured, if you go and you actually look at what actually happened in court, you probably find that some of those 15 were things like some person saying, hey, fuck you, Jew. Or maybe not even as bad as fuck you, Jew. And then that kind of thing is now taken by the Jews. Oh, we got to take this person to the court, try to put him in jail, you know? And that's what the Jew rat scum will try to do. I would posit that chances are that there really is no problem in the state of Ontario and that you didn't even need 17 charges in 5 years. Chances are most, if not all, of those charges were laid at the insistence of Jews, and that if it wasn't for Jews abusing those laws, whites would not even have bothered to begin with. So here you again are returning to the clashes between race and the clashes of diversity. If you had a white state where it's just whites and the whites do their thing like they used to do in the past, whites would either not even have had these laws, or as they are doing currently, they have these laws for a couple of weird situations. But mostly they don't bother with it because it's not that important. Now the Jews are like, oh no, the system is wrong. We need to change it. No, the system's not wrong. The system's absolutely perfectly fine for white people. But it's these Jews that are making a thing out of it. And it's the Jewish cancer inside society. That's the real issue. It's not the whites that are the issue, but it's the cancer that's at work, and the cancer is claiming that parts of the body are the problem, when in fact the real issue is the cancer is the problem. The Jews are the real problem. Now, one of the good things that comes out of this is that when you get a bit closer and you look at the courts and you look at the cops and you look at the whites, you'll see that in reality, the majority of the whites, the cops, the government, the majority of them aren't actually overly concerned about the Jewish issues. But what they have is Jews pulling their strings and pulling the strings of the government and the state and using their contacts and string pulling to manipulate those whites. Therefore, if there was no Jewish string pulling, the Germans would be fine. The Germans would be able to say anything the hell they wanted about the Holocaust. Even if those laws are there, but Jews weren't pulling the strings, the Germans could probably get quite a lot of stuff still done quite okay. But the Jew entity is busy pulling strings everywhere. It's not that the German government or the German cops are waking up every day saying, oh, which anti-Semites and Holocaust deniers can we grab today? That every German judge sitting in a court is waiting and seething and ready to toss Germans into jail by the hundreds of thousands. No, they're not that interested in that. They have got other priorities, but it turns out that this weird law is on the books and now they are committed to that. The real solution is to get those laws removed from those books. That's the real solution. All this Holocaust denial and all these, let's call it, Jewish privilege laws need to go. The Jewish privilege laws need to be removed from the law books. They should not be there. There should be no Jewish privilege laws. Here are your Jewish privilege laws. I just want to repeat, the Jewish issue is a racial issue, it's a diversity issue, and it should show you, if you've got a country that is not all white, and you've got other aliens in there, you now have a clash between the whites and those aliens. You are trying to use one legal system for everybody. Maybe another solution is segregation. Segregation and splitting things up. If the Jews want to live in America, then maybe the Jews should have a state in America. And that state with its laws is the only way that they can live. You know, that kind of thing. You really should look at this issue of other people moving into your society and you applying one set of laws, one set of rules to those people and the problems that come from that. This is where the whites of Africa had a better system, because we had segregation and we had different rules for different people. And that system works much better. You segregate your society. If you can't get rid of the people, then the next level step is at least segregate it. And that's what whites used to do in the past. They used to put Jews in their own ghettos, etc. But you will see that the real issue here is, the issue is not that the whites are sick. The issue is Jews among whites, an alien entity that doesn't belong there, doesn't fit in there, that becomes a problem. And that entity becomes a real danger and a real threat. That entity is very dangerous. The final thing that I want to mention about Alfred is that Alfred pointed out that people in their own family in Germany got all panicked when they learned about these videos, and that people in their own family ran to the cops to report them, and that this also went down. Now, this is true for Germany, but this kind of thing is not as common in America or Canada or South Africa. You don't have family members running off to go and report you. But Germany is different now. Remember, the Germans have been heavily indoctrinated, heavily indoctrinated, and heavily threatened. So they have been told, oh, Holocaust denial, hate crimes, and you got to spy on people, and you got to tell the cops, etc. Members of their family, perhaps out of fear for their own jobs and things, may have then got all freaked out when they saw what Alfred and Monica were doing, and they are freaked out for themselves, and they fear the state, and so they are running off to do that which they are conditioned to do. In that case, in the case of the Germans, it's really a fact that a alien set of laws was forced down on Germans. And now Germans are uncomfortable in this society. And they've been told, oh, these are hideous hate crimes, etc. And if you knew about it, but you didn't tell the cops, then, you know, you are also part of the problem. I don't know if they can be convicted or whatever. But something like that is at work. It shows you the sickness of German society with all this propaganda and anti-Nazi garbage. But the Americans do have something that's almost close to this, and that is doxing, where Jews are able to expose people. Oh, you're a right winger. And if you put it out there, oh, they're right-wingers, the hard right-wingers, the Nazis, then you can't get a job, you can't feed yourself, etc. And so doxing in America shows you a similar kind of thing, where a part of American society has been so brainwashed that just mentioning the issue of race in any way, shape, or form now causes other people to act against you. And so white Americans in the white right are very, very jumpy over doxing, because doxing is going to destroy you. But just like German society, doxing only works because enough Jewish poison has reached enough white Americans. That's all. In the same way that enough propagandizing has reached Germans, that people in the Schaefer family feel very uncomfortable and they rather run off to the state because they've been conditioned and they fear things. So you've got signs of a broader illness. Now, in the case of the Germans, if the Germans can be a little bit more free and a little bit more relaxed, then that illness will not have that effect. The same is true for the Americans. If someone is doxed as a right winger and he gets up and he fights for his rights and he carries on functioning and that kind of thing, that's the only way for whites to ultimately combat that thing. It should get to the point where the Jews can dox everybody in the white right and nobody cares anymore. I think that doxing is only effective currently, but with time, you need some kind of support group for those people, and then doxing will lose its effectiveness. Again, this is an example of the kinds of tactics that these people come up with because they have fed poisons into your society. The poisons have taken hold of other whites, and now those whites behave in a weird way. In the same way that the Schaefer family turned on Alfred and Monica. You need to get all these Jewish poisons out of society. And when you get rid of these poisons, then all of these tactics start falling apart. These tactics can be destroyed if you can wake enough people up. If you wake enough people up and they hear, anti-Semitism, Hitler, that's nothing of importance here. That's nothing to get excited about. You need to normalize. You need to normalize National Socialism. You need to normalize racial thinking. This stuff used to be normal and it used to be quite fine, but Jews have turned it into a poison. They've created their Jewish poisons to fight these things. But again, it just brings you back to the clash between whites and Jews, that race is real and whites are not allowed to think about real things. And whites are not allowed to think about real things that matter to them and defend them. And the alien entity wants to suppress things that can cause a healthy biological reaction against the entity and destroy the cancer. So that's what's going on here. You've got humans clashing with humans, but you've got this Jewish race / culture clashing with whites. If people can even make progress on small things and even work at things like countering the lies, then most of these Jewish poisons will sooner or later have no effect. And part of what I'm trying to say to you is that it is not the vast majority of whites that are sick. It's not everybody in the German state and government who's sick. The vast majority of whites are fine. The Jews are only able to control these things because of various methods and tactics that they have. That's all. And those methods and tactics can be countered. The big solution is education of everybody. If all whites are educated everywhere, then the entire Jewish control of the West will just collapse in a heap. Whites can actually defeat Jews very easily, actually. And even small numbers of whites who put up stiff resistance in the way that David Irving and the lawyer Doug Christie and Ernst Zundel fought in the system and fought legally, etc., and fought with propaganda and media, Those kinds of actions ultimately actually make a big difference. Those whites have helped massively to help push us towards the light and the truth and reality. You know, all the work from George Lincoln Rockwell, Dr. William Pierce, Tom Metzger, all these other people who've done things, all of those things have helped to get us to a point where there are quite a lot of whites whose minds are open. But you need to carry on the education. When there's enough education, I can tell you the Jews can be like someone who's got a gun where they pull the trigger. You could look at what the Jews are doing as someone with a gun and they just pull the trigger and the rest of the gun is actually a white structure. And all that the Jews are doing is they're pulling the trigger. But if you do this correctly, you could get it to the point where the Jews can pull the trigger as much as they want and nothing is going to happen because all the other parts of the gun are not going to function the way that they're used to. That's all. But all of these problems come from tolerance. These problems come from tolerance of human garbage. These problems come from allowing a foreign entity to come, to grow, to nurture, to build. And then you discover that the entity that's in your country is your enemy. You discover that you've got an enemy within. All white people in all white countries will discover that they've got an enemy within, and that enemy is Jews. So those are my thoughts based on what Alfred has sent. What will follow now is the actual show with Alfred, where Alfred and I discuss this matter. But I hope that it helps you to understand the mechanisms, because once you understand the mechanisms, what it opens up is if we could get even just small groups of whites who could tackle certain parts of these problems. One area where we are tremendously weak, tremendously, tremendously weak, is in legal stuff. We just don't have enough lawyers. And the legal system itself seems to me to be very heavily Jew corrupted everywhere. That's even true in South Africa. And that lawyers are afraid to defend, quotes, racists because the other lawyers and other people in the system will stop them from making money, will damage their careers. I saw that. We need lawyers. We really need lawyers everywhere where we've got lawyers who've got balls and who can survive, let's call it lawyer doxing, where you've got lawyers who don't mind going into a court with a, quotes, racist and defending that racist to the maximum. I saw in the legal stuff that the real issue is a lack of lawyers who are willing to get up and fight for you, where they are worried about their careers. That's what I came to the conclusion of. And I even saw that judges and magistrates can be scared. They can be scared of what Jews can do. All of this comes back to how far does Jewish power extend? Which industries and businesses and jobs and professions are Jew infiltrated and affected by Jews? Because Jews will punish anyone. They will do, let's call it Jewish sanctions. They will try to destroy a judge or a lawyer whom they don't like. You've got this poisonous, cancerous entity inside the body, and this entity has got many little things that it does, and it nails some white guy over here, destroys a lawyer over there, destroys someone else over there. That is what is really going on in our countries. And it's really a bad, bad situation. Ultimately, I say that white people must have a white-only society and whites need to look after themselves. And then you'll find that 95% of all this nonsense will disappear instantly. These issues will not even be issues. In a whites-only society, you'll be able to do your free speech, do your thing, do your stuff like Americans used to do, like Canadians used to do, like Germans used to do, like South Africans used to do. You'll be able to do all your stuff, and 90% or 95% of this Jewish-related rubbish won't even be needed. There are lots of laws that you'll be able to remove from the law books. You'll be able to scrap these things. You'd need to get politicians with balls to go into parliament and to vote this stuff down, destroy this stuff, get rid of it. This stuff isn't really necessary. The only reason all of this stuff exists and all of these problems are there is because you've got lots of Jews in your society. That's the root of the evil. So what follows is my discussion with Alfred Schaefer. Hi there, Alfred. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks, Jan. I'm doing fine. Things are moving very nicely in our direction, even if it's very chaotic, but they are moving.
Don't worry about the chaos. The chaos is good. Years and years ago, when I was thinking about the future and how, you know, what could work for us and the things we need to do, I was thinking about South Africa, actually. The more I looked at everything and how it was working, the more I came to the conclusion that what we need is chaos, that chaos and madness is good, because it doesn't matter how good our enemies are at planning, and they're not really that good always. It doesn't matter how good they are. Once things get a life of their own and individual people and groups of people start grabbing onto stuff and running with it, etc., all the chaos, and it also doesn't even matter who initiates the chaos. Doesn't even matter if the chaos is initiated by them indirectly or people reacting to them or whatever. The chaos gets a life of its own. And once that chaos goes, there are all kinds of things that start coming up that I fail to see how they could have anticipated all of the things, especially also with changing technology, changing politics, changing everything. The world is becoming so much more fluid now, you know, compared to even just 2-3 years ago, you know. So you know, there's got to be lots of stuff that backfires on them that they didn't even see coming, you know. So I'm happy when I hear chaos, I'm like, yes, we're going in the right direction.
Absolutely. You know, and you mentioned changing technology. The major technology that they could not really have anticipated and will never be able to totally control is the digital technology. When digital technology came out, they instantly grabbed everything they could. For example, Facebook and so forth. They didn't invent any of this stuff. They just take it and take it under their control with their financial means and their other means, you know. But it's always basically white European people who invented all this stuff. And it falls into Jewish hands through all their usual tricks, and they think they can retain that control, but they cannot, based on the nature of that technology. It's a little bit like if you go out in your yard and you take all the dandelions and kill them all, you'll be surprised the next day there'll be some more dandelions once again. They just, you know, that's biological reproduction. And digital technology is in many ways like biology basically, in that you don't need a lot of money to massively reproduce certain you know, messages like memes or you know, bits of, you know, words and so forth. You can run copies, you can make distribution lists. And basically, in the old days, you had to have a lot of money to own a newspaper and distribute that. But nowadays, everybody with a brain and a little bit of initiative can actually reproduce messages and what they want to say all over the place. And that's something they will never be able to completely control.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, from my computer perspective, when I started thinking about politics in the year 2000, And I started looking at the internet, and another buddy of mine actually created our first website. He was a guy who hosted websites back then. And he came up with the idea of setting up a website. And then from there onwards, I grabbed it and I went with it. And, you know, when I started looking at it as a computer programmer, then I started saying to myself, you know, okay, so they can take this action against us and that action against us, but they can't stop everything. And there are so many options. And if you stay technically advanced, I can't see how they can stop you completely. And, you know, so many things came out afterwards, like people forget that hosting companies used to shut down our websites. My website was shut down by American hosting companies, South African hosting companies. South African hosting companies were too useless, so I used American hosting companies. And then the Americans would shut me down. They'd fucking just shut my website down, bang. And they'd take my emails away and all that kind of stuff. And then I'd battle to find another one. Can I find another one? And then I get another one, and I managed to keep that for a couple of years, and then they shut it down. But you know what has happened is they must have been shutting down so many websites over the years that later on, when virtual computer technology came along, you then had a whole industry that just exploded. Because it wasn't just political websites that were being shut down. They were shutting down all kinds of personal websites. Okay, some of them were dodgy. But the bottom line is that there was a big demand by people for websites and stuff. And you know what? When these virtual computer systems came, they could allow people to not only set up their own websites, but control their entire machine 100% the way they wanted to. And now there are loads and loads and loads of virtual computers spewing out everything, running websites, blasting out emails. I actually think that they've overloaded the global emails just through those things, because later they had to introduce lots and lots of very sophisticated email standards in order to slow down the emails. So, now it's easier than ever. And those companies that run these virtual computers, those companies will only shut your machine down if you commit an actual crime. You've got to commit a crime. You've got to do illegal stuff. If it's not illegal, they don't care. They just don't care. And so now it's actually easier than ever to have websites.
You use the term illegal, and the Jews, their way of operating is they define for us what is legal and illegal based on their narrative, which is all lies. Even the Jews, they said themselves, once what they know for themselves, when they go down the path of the lie, there is no going back. And their lies have been so enormous, so massive, and yet and they always somehow carried it forward until the point we find ourselves today. And this is now so extremely monstrous that nobody wants to be seen as the last person to understand the massiveness of these lies. And now, no matter what, when they define, for example, the denial of their pathetic, infantile, criminal superstition known as the Holocaust, then they define that as being illegal to contest. I mean, come on, how it's like if you go to a doctor and the doctor has his finger stuck up his ass and you ask him why he's got his finger up his ass and he says it's because it's more hygienic there, you will immediately turn around and go and find another doctor. Any human being who doesn't understand that the hollow hoax is just a Jewish lie for them to play the big victim, they are no longer taken seriously, no more seriously than the doctor who stands there grinning at you with his finger stuck up his ass. And that's as clear as it gets. So then you have people on the other side. They understand the value of the information, the inside information. They know. They know who's responsible for this and responsible for that. And they know that this information can save their neck as this thing turns around. And that's where we are right now. We find ourselves at the absolute implosion of the masters of the lies of this Judaic insanity, which has to be seen as a disease. I mean, it's their lies together with their ability to enforce these lies or our parroting these lies through what we call laws and their control over the money. That is, in fact, the diagnosis of what is a disease that is inflicting all of our civilizations, Western civilizations. Actually, the entire planet's civilizations are now infested or inflicted with this disease. And like I say, if you came from another planet, you know, as an alien, and could observe what's going on this planet, you would say, oh, well, okay, this is a very short-term thing. They are going to get this. They're going to figure this out, get control of it, and God help the last people who figure it out. That's where we are right now. And like I know myself, the absolute revulsion I feel for when a grown white person stands in front of me and doesn't seem to get it. They, for me, are like a zero, like a piece of dog crap or something. They are just nothing. And this is a general, people generally are getting the same emotional rage by confronting people who feign the level of ignorance that you need to have not to openly spell it out what is wrong with our civilization right now. So that's where we find ourselves.
Yeah, very interesting. Well said, Alfred. Alfred, I have a question to ask you. A couple of weeks ago, one of my close supporters here in South Africa, who's very wake up and he knows his stuff and he studies National Socialism a lot and he's a big fan of the Germans and Hitler. He said, we had a discussion the one day, and he said to me, you know, Jews, I can't remember how we got there, but it came to a point where he basically said, Jews just give orders and governments just do things. And then I began to think, because he was talking about when the police come to your door. That's what we were heading towards. We were going around talking about that kind of thing, and so he said, you know, Jews just order the government, and the government just does it. And I said to him that, you know, strictly speaking, it doesn't work exactly that way. The links between the government and the cops and the Jews are not quite the way that you think it is. And then I said to him, you know, in my case, when they came after me to drag me into court, it didn't work that way, because it was the local Jewish organization here in South Africa that set the cops on me. And then I said to him that when I was on YouTube for the year and a half that I was on YouTube, that on YouTube gets lots and lots of legal complaints. And the time when I was on YouTube, Google was even nice. And then when they get a legal complaint, then they say, oh, we got a legal complaint about you, but don't worry, you know, our legal department will look into it. So I began to realize, based on the nature of the legal complaints that were coming in, that these legal complaints were all coming from places in Europe. And I began to realize, based on the messages and things that were coming, that Google has got a huge legal department, because Google owns YouTube. YouTube's got a huge legal department, and they must be getting mountains of legal complaints about videos all the time. Anyway, as it was, the complaints became more and more and more. It started out a little bit, and then it became a flood, and all of them related to the so-called laws of anti-Semitism in Europe, because it's not just Germany. There are other countries as well that have also got bans and so forth. So then by the time they eventually shut down all my accounts and I tried to open new YouTube accounts, in the end, I got something like 800 legal complaints before YouTube decided to shut my accounts down completely and utterly and never allow me to have an account again. And I just never bothered to go back. So I realized there's a lot of legal activity going on. Then I said to this South African friend of mine that, you know what? What about Alfred Schaefer? I know Alfred Schaefer. I said to him, I don't know how exactly the cops came to his door, but I don't think it was the German government by itself or even the cops by themselves that decided to go after Alfred Schaefer. So I said to him, let me ask Alfred. And that's when you sent me that video. And I'd like your story as it happened to you. How did you see things, and how did you find out who was coming after you?
Okay. When the video that really triggered B'nai B'rit in Canada was the video, Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, that we did in June, I believe it was June of 2016, when my sister was here for a visit in the summertime. And that video really was like a nuclear bomb, right, in their hallowed halls of, you know, Holocaustianity kind of thing. And so they saw, so B'nai B'rit sent, they sent a formal complaint to the Germans. In fact, I have in the court materials, like the documents and so forth, I should see if I could find it again. I actually found a letter that came from this Jewish organization instructing the Germans to go after us kind of thing. But they didn't, Monica was arrested when she came for a visit in the end of 2017 for Christmas, and then she was arrested in January of 2018, which was a couple of years or a year and a half after doing that video. But another thing I also learned is that as we did that video in the summer of 2016, we have cousins of ours who we showed this, and they so freaked out at this because they were so deeply indoctrinated that they actually sent a letter to the state prosecutor. We have Holocaust deniers that we want to have charged here. Because I guess they believe that they get some Browning points or something like that, being teachers, like one of them is a teacher, and and so forth. So they think that they are doing themselves a favor by snitching on us. But we didn't hear of that. We didn't know of that. And yet, until my sister came to visit like a year and a half later, and then they arrested her here when she had no idea that there was anything open against her. They arrested her, and all this came out later. So basically, B'nai B'rit, the Jewish organization, ordered the German authorities to put an end to us, but they and they had this family snitches, basically, when you denounce somebody in your own family. That's like in the Soviet Union when kids would snitch on their parents and would snitch on their neighbors and so forth. We have got those conditions now here. So it was B'nai B'rit that triggered it, but they did not have the balls to use that at that point in time against us. They waited for an opportune moment, and then they claimed it. You know, so they kind of hide in the shadows, and wait for opportune moment to put us to arrest us, and that's what they did. So it's kind of a. It took a year and a half, which gave us lots of time to make more videos and you know, move our work ahead, sort of thing. yeah, and then even the trial was I was amazed how much opportunity they actually did give us to present our work in the courtroom. And for me, it was, I mean, my sister and I, we were just in an elated state kind of thing. at this trial, it was like, hey, this, we were cut out for this role, like Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing. Like, why do they want to do this to us? Because in the end, in the long term, they're going to lose. I mean, I know my sister and she knows me, and we know we're just going to do this no matter what. And that's what we're, that's what we find now. Like this, no matter how they work, we know what the truth is. We know what our role is, and engaging the system is everything. And everybody will be measured at the end of the day by when they started to engage the system on whatever level, which whatever means possible. Just start engaging the system, whether it's this corona vaccine stuff. I mean, people should say, you know, come to me with that needle and I'm gonna slug your teeth out with my fist. I mean, that's a sort of a natural reaction that people should have. Is like, we are fighting for our very existence right now. And so I've kind of drifted off the topic a little bit now.
No problem. So B'nai B'rith did get their letter to the German police before your family started snitching,
It actually was simultaneous. Like they must have all that video. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. That triggered an immediate snitching action by our cousins, who we showed that video, and they immediately, like 2 days later, kind of thing. They wrote that letter in an email to the state prosecutor. We are asking for our anonymity. They didn't want anybody to find out. Well, too bad for that. I've seen the stuff, so I know they snitched. I can send them a copy to really freak him out. But B'nai B'rith also wrote a letter to have the Germans go after us. But it took a year and a half. When Monica came then, a year and a half later, that's when they arrested her. So it took a year and a half before that actually triggered, you know, the solid action. And they had raided my house here fairly shortly after that video. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. So I guess that triggered that police raid, right? And then after that police raid, that's when I did the video. I bought some new equipment and so forth because they like to steal all the stuff. And then I made that video, police raid and my confession. And what I confessed to, it was a great opportunity for me to make this confession, because after uploading my first video, which was only about 9/11, it was called 9/11 Gatekeepers and Controlled Opposition. I uploaded that in, I think it was May 2014. And by about 12 to 18 months after uploading that video, I was being attacked more and more seriously for the content errors that I had made. I was comparing the evil Zionists with the evil Nazis. I didn't use the word Jews so much because at that point in my, I was still heavily indoctrinated myself. And I sort of says, well, it's the Zionists, you know, it's the Zionists. And I still believed sort of this nonsense about those evil Nazis, even though I didn't believe, you know, all the crazy stories about, you know, 6 million dead Jews and all that. But somehow I believed that, okay, they were bad people. So I compared the nastiness of the Zionists with the nastiness of the Nazis. And when people saw that, when I was, you know, making this comparison, they says, oh, look at him. He's just exactly what he is claiming not to be, a gatekeeper. You know, it was a movie about 9/11 gatekeepers. And my making the mistake of seeing the Germans in, you know, the Nazis as being something evil made me basically appear as I'm a gatekeeper. I'm keeping that lie going, sort of thing. And I was being attacked more and more seriously because of that lie. And then after that police raid, I saw the opportunity to come out and confess, because in the meantime, I had learned, you know, as we all learn and learn more and more, I had learned that the Germans were the last defense against this Jewish, this crime syndicate, basically, of mass murdering, lying, cheating Jews. The eternal poisoners of the wells kind of thing, going for a world domination, which is what they blamed the Germans for trying to do, which the Germans never wanted to do. The Germans only wanted to free themselves from this parasite. And this picture was forming after in my mind after I had done the 9/11 video. And that gave me the opportunity to confess that I myself had behaved like a programmed rat. And I used these mistakes that I made in that first video as evidence of the fact that I myself was behaving as a programmed rat and have come out of that condition. And that's an important thing that we all have to be able to do. We have to be able to admit to ourselves and everyone we around us that we actually believed silly, nonsensical lies that affected and controlled our behavior. Like you can control, you can teach your dog, for example, to rip the head off of little blonde children, and your dog will do that for you, not thinking there's anything wrong with it, because that's how he was conditioned. Because every time he does that, you give him a little doggy biscuit and you scratch him behind his ears and he's all happy. And then when the police come to you and say, oh, your dog is doing some malicious stuff here, you know, you can talk your way out of it and say, oh, I wasn't there when the dog did that. I'm not responsible. No, you trained the dog. And the Jews, they train us to do their dirty work. That's why the Jews in 1859, I believe it was Rabbi Reichhorn who proclaimed war is the Jews' harvest. We have already killed over 100 million of these goyim, and that makes more space for us. We get control of their gold, and it's just great for us. So Jews are the wars are for the Jews' harvest time, and that's what we see right now. I mean, just like COVID, Corona, you know, injecting all the people, that's a massive harvest for the Jews. You know, they're making money, they're taking over all the property from people who are dying off from the injections and so forth. And that's what we're faced right now, we have to understand the big picture going back way before our date of birth. And I mean, this picture goes back actually thousands of years, and this is an outbreak of this disease called Judaism like this planet has never seen before. So that's where we're at right now.
Yes, agreed. We've got the worst infection of Jews in the history of the world. People, you know, historians are still going to write about this. 100 years from now, 200 years from now, when people have had time to think and they've seen all the things that come out of this, then they will talk about this time, and all these things that we are living through are going to be recorded, make no mistake. So I just want to confirm, in terms of the police raiding your house, did the police raid your house after they received the letter from B'nai B'rith, or did the snitching family cause it, or had both of those things happened already?
They raided, I was raided the first time only several weeks after uploading the Sorry Mum, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust video. And I believe that the initiator for that would have been the B'nai B'rith actions or activity, informing the German government, you know, you get this thing under control, basically. And that was the response. They raided me, and then they kept the snitching thing from our relatives. That was, I only learned about that when I could see, had insight into all the stuff that was, you know, said, all the documentation against us. And I found that in there. And so I can't really say exactly what triggered it, but I believe it was, well, a combination. B'nai B'rith got into gear, and we were snitched by our cousins there.
Okay, interesting. Because definitely B'nai B'rith admits in that video, they admit that they contacted their associates in Germany. So I'm sure they continued their work and their pressure. And it's interesting how they use our systems. I have watched, when I think back to the Jews I knew in South Africa, and the Jews that I regarded as friends, and I looked at how well they know our systems, and that they know our systems at a high level. They know our processes, and they tap into it straight away, and they use these things. So very interesting about B'nai B'rith and what they were doing. Interestingly enough, in the time of that excellent lawyer, his name escapes me now, that excellent historian, the guy who wrote all those books about Hitler.
Oh, David Irving?
David Irving. David Irving. Yeah. Thank you. David Irving, when he was in court, he also actually in another video mentioned that he's in court and B'nai B'rith in Canada was talking to some Jews in South Africa, I think it was. He had the Canadian to South African link as well. And it was also B'nai B'rith. And B'nai B'rith is some kind of, B'nai B'rith is an important Jewish organization that people don't really seem to notice much. Maybe because in America there's the ADL. I don't know if there's a B'nai B'rith in America, but there was a B'nai B'rith in South Africa. Do you know that the former president of South Africa, P.W. Botha, he actually told me face to face when I was in his house. He told me that B'nai B'rith paid the last white president of South Africa. They paid him R1 million to sell us out. So, he said that as a straight fact. He told me that in 2006. So this B'nai B'rith is very active and it's got lots of tentacles. But it's also kind of secretive. You don't read much about it, but it's got a lot of power and that thing is working. So.
Well, basically, B'nai B'rith is like the top lodge, if you will, you know, like Freemason Lodge. It's the top lodge. All other Freemason lodges are some report basically on their chain of you know, reporting kind of thing to B'nai B'rith at the end of the day. And that is their power. They have And like you were saying before, when they were shutting down your websites and all these complaints came from Europe and so forth, this is the international Jew. They do that. That's how they control us. They have all – so many of these Jews are doing nothing but waiting for orders to what to complain about and so forth. So they can flood the certain let's say governmental posts or whatever, you know, departments with mail from all around the globe. So it makes it look like the entire earth is now outraged about something. So when you were being shut down and all these Jews everywhere, they're triggered to write the same similar kind of complaints to the proper places to have you shut down. That's how they operate. We don't have that cohesion. Like, we're all minding our own business, going after honest kind of work sort of thing, whereas the Jews, that is their whole existence, is running the matrix that controls us. And then money is the foundation or the basis that keeps them going. And because of these incredible massive theft of fortunes that we can't even imagine, and they distribute this money into their organizations through their synagogues and so forth. And that's why that's their whole being. As white people go out to, you know, till the soil and build buildings and so forth, the Jews are out there. They only come into play after the civilization has been built, and then they start pulling the strings and sowing, you know, producing false flag operations and lying and cheating and embezzling and so forth. And right now we have a level of criminality that is our death if we don't get out of it. It's like a cancer. They are a cancer to our civilization.
Absolutely. No, the things that are going down, there are things that are going down that I'm sure will be written about in history books. I look especially at the Americans and all the bizarre things that happen with the Americans and the government and their expenses, and their printing of money is going through the roof. It's like trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, and it's all stuff that can't be repaid, you know. I am sure that there are enormous scams that are still going to make the scams of the Jews in the Weimar Republic look like child's play. Because I watch other things like stock markets as well. There's another concept called derivatives. Derivatives is very bizarre. It is like stuff that has got value, but basically, if you value all the assets of the world, then you get to a certain number, let's say $16 trillion. That's like everything in the world physically that exists. But if you go and you look into like derivatives and all this other money and stuff that's being printed, you now have got money values that are bigger, much bigger than the value of everything on the planet. And that does not make sense, actually. How can you have money that can be turned into real money to buy real assets, and yet that money is just money that's invented, and it's worth more than, it's worth many times more than the value of every single item on the planet. So there's a bunch of screwy stuff there, and that money can be turned into real money and can buy real assets. So it means that,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, there was. I remember in the roaring 80s and so forth, going back, you know, before 9/11 and so forth. I remember there were hearing statements about the money that money that is being shifting hands back and forth because of speculation was a multiple, many times more than the money that was exchanging hands for the actual purchase of goods. For example, if you get a container ship full of cars or something, a certain amount of money is going to be change hands because of that container ship full of cars. But the money for speculation was much more, that was changing hands was far higher than the money for real goods. And when you think of what money actually is, if you could have the most criminal, most useless, worthless person who has stolen a lot of money, and this person claims access to real value based on the money that he has in his hands. That's the unnatural thing in our civilization, that when we have a state where the money is no longer directly tied to real value, as is the case now, as you were just describing, you know, with your derivatives and so forth, that leads now, this even the stolen money is no longer enough to pay for, you know, all the wars and shit that they want to do and are trying to pull off, and this leads another printing money, but that is now just hyperinflation. The money has got no connection to real value, and our only way to survive in the short term is actually to start trading with people something that you can produce, or a value that you can produce for something that you need to survive. That's what this is coming down to. Because all of a sudden, this money that has no real value, and it's just a, you know, just like digital money or something, that's some fantasy thing. When you need to get some food on the table, and everything is blacked out, that's the situation that we will be faced with on a global scale, like our mega cities, you know, millions of inhabitants and so forth, with a breakdown of the infrastructure, with the financial system in chaos, which is exactly where we're heading now. That's what we have to try to resolve in as civilized a fashion as possible. And that's what our big challenge is right now. And and that's why we can expect people from within the system who might have been serving, you know, the most evil Jews kind of thing, that they find their conscience and their common sense. They will be we're expecting them to come in droves to our side to help us resolve this in a civilized fashion. Because not doing so means our collective death. We will all be in a situation that not one of us ever wanted. That's what we will have if we fail to do this in a civilized fashion.
Absolutely. Yeah, Alfred, we've touched on so many various things. There are so many we could talk for forever. There are just a couple of things that you've said that I just want to zero in on. You know, the more I study these things and I watch what's going down, the more I find myself saying, but you know, I'm starting to understand, why was it that Hitler said things like, you will learn to hate capitalism, you will, you know, why did the Nazis hate capitalism? I'm starting to understand now. Now I'm starting to understand. It's making total sense. And I fail to see how we are going to be able to continue with the system. To me, it's like the only, and all of the things that they did, all of the things that your German ancestors did make so much sense now. And I look at it and I say, but you know, there is no better solution than the solution they came up with. They came up with the only logical thing that you can do. And it's not like they were nasty or anything. That's all a bunch of Jewish screeching and lying. They actually, because I did a video, I don't know if you ever saw it, but I did a video about what actually happens in pogroms. And I did a video where I compared real genocides versus the fake genocide and what actually goes down in what Jews call a pogrom. So, you know, I showed, like, for example, if 1 million people get killed in Africa, you know, these are the photographs you will see. These are the pictures you'll actually see of these dead people lying all over the place. And you'll have tons and tons of witnesses and evidence, physical evidence, okay? And then you go to the Holocaust and there's nothing, okay? So there's 6 million dead. And what is even more bizarre about the fake Holocaust is that, you know, if you go to places where there were genocides and, you know, where 1 million people were really chopped up, You don't find tons of those people coming out of the forest and so forth in Africa saying, oh, you see, they were going to kill us, but they didn't, and I got away. No, the only place where you get that is with Jews. Jews are the only place where there are tons and tons of survivors, and their numbers seem to be increasing all the time. They don't seem to die, even though it's like coming on 100 years later, and everyone survived. Oh, I survived. And then they put me on a truck, and then a Nazi dog bit me. And you know, every story is completely different and loony. Okay. So that's the one thing, is comparing real stuff with imaginary stuff. And then I went to look for, you know, what is actual evidence when people are really angry with Jews? And I found a couple of pictures, and if you go and you read about it, then they say, oh, you see, in Vienna, there was this Holocaust in Vienna. So you go and you actually find the actual pictures of the Holocaust in Vienna, and the Holocaust in Vienna, you'll actually see a bunch of Jew rat scum that have been caught by the Nazis, and the Nazis have given them brushes and things to clean the streets with. So that's it. Okay, that's it. You've got a bunch of Jews and they're busy cleaning the streets, and that's that.
Jan, yeah. When a Jew has to do physical work, that is a Holocaust. Really, that's a Holocaust. I mean, you know, we have the perfect storm upon us. The complete and total opposite of what they are telling us, you know, the opposite of the reality. And now when people begin to understand that, and it's come to such an extreme at this point in time, I can't even find words to describe the extreme polarity of the situation that we find ourselves in right now. But that is going to be the energy that will drive the biological response to this. And that's why I say that the only thing I find worse than a Jew that still feeds us these lies are our people that still follow these lies. I mean, they deserve to be flogged on the street openly. Anybody who still repeats these nonsensical, infantile, superstitious, not bullshit about Holocaust. I mean, come on, please. With the invaders coming in, the Negroes flooding into Europe, they laugh themselves silly that any European could believe such nonsensical, superstitious bullshit. I mean, it's beyond words, and that's the way it is. And that's why when they still have a court case you know, like for Ursula Havebeck, a 95-year-old woman, because of Holocaust denial. I don't know why she even went there. I would never have gone to that place. I would have said, let them come and pick me up at home. I wouldn't go to a place like that. I do not talk to people whose bosses or they themselves rape 3-year-old non-Jewish girls to prove that they are good Jews. I mean, you don't deal with people like that. You do not deal with them. They are, you know, it's just like I don't go to a doctor that has his finger stuck up his ass for hygienic purposes. I will go to a different doctor. I do not trust a doctor at that point, at that level. And that's what these people are. They are not our go-to people for any kind of, you know, problems or telling us what's good and what's bad.
Yeah. Well, Hitler's real crime was he put the Jews to work, and they can't forgive him for that. They've been stealing money and screaming and lying about it till the end of time, because if there's one thing they don't do is they don't do physical labor.
But that traumatized them. That traumatized them forever, you know.
It shocked their asses off. He's the first guy in probably hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, that made them actually put in an honest day's work, and they hated, and they will never stop hating him until the end of time. And you know, these people are so arrogant. There's a disgusting Jewish actress in America. I think it's I forget which name, because there are so many names. But I remember coming across a quote where one of these arrogant Jewish bitches actually turned around and she said something like, the only time I will like, I can't remember the exact quote, but it boils down to the only time that I'll go down on the floor is if there are diamonds lying there. You know, real stuck up, worthless, useless Jew. So of course they are insulted by all these things. And two other little quick things is, you were saying that I'm totally with you on the fact that Jews train whites. Absolutely. Jews train whites. Jews define and tell us what our values are. They are so arrogant. They are so arrogant. And then there is, you know, the whole thing of Jews defining what is legal and what is illegal. Yet the things that are happening to whites now are beyond insane. I saw a story. I published a story the other day. A white woman in Germany was raped by a migrant. And then she insulted the migrant who raped her. She was thrown in jail for 2 days for insulting the guy who raped her. I mean, please. And then I saw another one. In America at a university, there were some lecturers or teachers. I think it was at a college. There were some teachers, probably whites or whatever, and they were laughing at all the Jewish screeching about anti-Semitism. And the next thing you know is all of those people are gotten rid of. I'm not sure if they've actually formally fired them or whatever. But you know, when I look at this thing, as these Jews are pushing things so far, the big point is that if you leave the Jews to carry on, if the Jews carry on as they do, you begin to see a beautiful thing happening, and that is that even the Jewish narrative starts breaking down. Like the Jews can't, you know, you'd imagine these people who claim to have to, they claim to be clever, but I dispute that. I dispute that. I think Hitler was on the money when he said Jews are dumber than whites. Dead on the money.
Absolutely. Yep.
And it finally comes through, over and above the fact that they bullshit and they're never really honest anyway. So the other thing is that these Jews, as they continue with their nonsense and they complain and moan and bitch, it's amazing when they are given a chance to have their way, that then it suddenly becomes all weird. Like the American government was stupid enough to start allowing the Jews to define anti-Semitism, and you would think, you know, And first of all, I dispute the term anti-Semitism. I will tell you what the definition of anti-Semitism is. The definition of anti-Semitism is anybody that is either an enemy of the Jews or anyone that the Jews don't like. That's the definition of anti-Semitism. That covers all the bases. You will not believe how difficult it is for the race of Jewish rats to be able to define anti-Semitism. Now they've got a project to define anti-Semitism. These are the people who screech about anti-Semitism for hundreds of years, and now when you say to them, okay, so what is an anti-Semite? They can't even tell you the rules. Because basically it boils down to anyone they don't like. There isn't a specific thing. It's whoever they just don't like at that point in time. The more I look at these people, the more nuts they are. And as you were saying, I think the most important final thing I must say is, as you were saying, is that even the people who are on their side are also going to start turning against them. And you know what's another thing I've noticed is that even the people who believed them will later on discover that they believed something that wasn't so, and they'll realize that this is also working against them. So
absolutely.
You know, this thing will break down. But the way that we could lose, the only way we could lose, is that if we go silent, if we go silent and we go sheepish and we accept this all, that's when we're going to lose.
Absolutely. You know, and the Jews, I keep repeating it, and we have to repeat that everything that the Jews are now doing is showing that they are absolutely not going to acknowledge that they did something wrong, and they would continue to go ever more extreme, ever more fanatical, ever more insane. And this will be used against them on Judgment Day, which is upon us now. They're not showing any remorse or insight into their evil doings is going to be held against them. They have proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that their intention is in fact the culling down of all of humanity into a negroid sludge mud race that they can easily manage. But there's a couple of flaws that shows how stupid they are. First of all, they cannot suck any more blood out of a mud race that they are trying to produce. But the main motivation for them wanting to exterminate us all now is because if we are dead, then we cannot exact any revenge upon them. It's like if you come into a town and you rape all the little girls and steal everything from everybody, and then before they wake up and figure out it was you, if you manage to actually kill all those people, then you would actually get off scot-free, and you could find another village to go and plunder. But for the Jews now, because it is global, they would have to find another planet to go to parasitize off of, and they can't do that. They're stuck. This is planet Earth. Their behavioral they're what they call their religion, which is a behavioral code or behavioral codex, basically, for becoming the perfect psychopaths, which they evolved and developed over thousands of years. This has led to them to this, the incredible success of actually dominating the entire planet. But if you, as a parasite, to dominate the whole planet, that eliminates the healthy host that you would need when the host you were sucking the blood out of dies. So we find ourselves now in the inescapable position of being the host that is supposed to be sucked dry until death. And we are in our death throes or survival. We are going to do, if you ever watch an animal being chased by a lion or something like that, and what the fierce kind of what comes to into play, you know, how an animal will do anything to escape the clutches of the lion. The lion will do anything to take down the prey. This is what we are in right now. This final battle. This is the battle, and the entire world, actually, all the races, no matter what they say about us, and because as they've been taught to say bad things about us, but they are all hoping that we get this resolved because they don't want to be stuck alone on this planet with the Jew. They want us to get this done and done properly. And then they will worship us for getting it done properly, because, I mean, the people that are flooding into our white countries are not the cream of the crop of those races where they come from. That's basically the flushing of the toilet, basically. I mean, you get to spell it out the way it is. And this is our final struggle. And like you were saying before, they will be writing about this period of time in 500 years from now, in 1,000 years from now. This is a pivotal point in human civilization. And we are the privileged ones who are living at this point, doing the role that we find ourselves in. And we're going to do this until our very last breath. And as people are coming on board and understanding what's happened to us, they also come into full form. I mean, those people who I see, like in Australia, for example, there's a number of really good people there. In Canada, there's a number of really good people. We did not see this quality of understanding the problem until now. Like, this is a new phenomenon, and this is spreading rapidly because these people we're educating each other, we're learning from each other, and our enemy has got 0.0 chance of coming out victorious, because we are representing the struggle of life itself, and they are nothing but the poisoners of the wells and death, and they can, you know, pack up and go. They can give up.
Well, Alfred, thank you so much for all of that. Alfred, thank you so much for all that input. That is very valuable, and I agree with you. Things are moving, and the main thing is look at those people like Nordic Resistance who've been declared terrorists. And I've spoken to them, the guys who are declared terrorists and they had their bank accounts shut down. They can't even live. They are struggling to exist, etc. You know, it's typical of these Jews. They want us to starve to death. They have no issue with that. We mustn't be allowed to even exist just if we open our mouths. Anyway, but the point is that as things are going forward, they are just trying to hit harder and harder, and probably before long, they'll even be trying to jail people who've not even committed a crime. Well, I mean, that's already happened to Alfred and his sister, so you and Monica have already been in jail for no reason at all, because the things that you did would never be regarded as a crime in any reasonable country. But it is what I like also about the chaos is that the Jews' friends, as well as the elite, as well as the governments themselves, and I think, Alfred, in many of your discussions, you've already raised the issue of your discussions with police, your interactions with other people from the state, and the fact that it doesn't look to you like they are that keen to be engaging in tossing you in jail and harassing you over this ridiculous nonsense, you know, Holocaust denial, anti-Semitism, etc. And ultimately, the fact that you've gone through this and other Germans in the system see you and get to assess you, etc., this same thing is now happening all across the world. And every time Jews try to drag someone into court, try to throw someone in jail, that person also actually gets a bit of, let's call it advertising. And that set of interactions also has got a bunch of offshoots that come out of it. And it's actually good, because as the Jews try to go wilder and wilder, the people in the system, as well as Jewish friends, Jewish allies, the wealthy who are in with the Jews, ultimately each and every one of those people has got to make a decision. They've got to make a personal decision. They'll start seeing, you know, these people are getting wilder and wilder. You know, for example, if the Jews had a chance, they would hang us all, they'd execute us all for anti-Semitism. Because that's what they did in the Soviet Union, and there have been Jews that have spoken about that. So you know, they would like to kill us, and there's also Jews. Oh yes, I came across a Jew, a Russian Jew, who set up an organization about a world free of Nazism. So you know, all Nazis have to be destroyed. All Nazis have to be wiped out, etc. And but Nazism is natural, and I cannot see that thing being destroyed. So the bottom line is that, you know, even the other people that are dealing with the Jews and are friendly with the Jews and are listening to the Jews, as they see these Jews making wilder and wilder and more insane demands and things, they themselves must start weighing up the fact, you know, like the police who arrested you and did stuff to you, they must surely go back to their police station and say, hell, you know, we could have been hunting for murderers today. Instead, we had to go and throw Alfred Schaefer into jail. And Alfred Schaefer hasn't harmed a single person. He hasn't stolen a cent from anyone. You know, why are we wasting our time with this shit? And that is why the chaos is great. And but the only thing that can cause us to lose is silence. So and I know that you don't stay silent. So yeah, thank you very much for being on the show, Alfred. We definitely got a lot to talk about still.
And thank you, Jan. And it's been a great discussion, and we'll have some follow-up discussions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening today. I hope that you learned something new today. Look after yourselves and take care. We'll be chatting again soon.
Give up, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win. Every fight you'll fight, every game you play, you will reach the top. At the top, that is where you will stay.